This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of Blockbuster Rewind here in the Place to Be Nation Bob Feed. I'm one of your co-hosts, Andy Atherton. Thank you for joining us tonight. Tonight, we're looking at a legendary character, a character that goes back decades. We're looking at one specific set of movies back from the 80s and 90s, and actually a little bonus one. We go all the way back to the 60s. We're talking about the one, the only Batman, but to join me to break it down are my other two co-hosts and our guests. So let's get them all in here and let's get the discussion underway. First off, Mr. Scott Shiflett. Scott, how are you doing?
Doing great, Andy. Waiting for to dance in the devil in the pale moonlight tonight.
There you go. I always ask that of your victims, right?
Yep.
All right. Also joining us, Eric Eels. Eric, how are you?
I'm good as long as I come in okay.
Yes, let's not pull back the curtain too much. A little technical difficulties prior to recording, but everything's good now. We can hear you. You can hear us.
Yes, I'm here. I'm sitting here in my Batman shirt. It wasn't so much a choice. It was like the top of the pile. Oh. I was like, okay, this is the thing to wear.
This is the top of the
dark shirts.
There you go. Lucky accent. Well, if we lose you again, just throw up the bat signal and we'll... We'll keep an eye out for you. Also joining us tonight is our esteemed guest. He appears on many, many shows across many feeds, but he is the host of NWA Croc and Roll over on the Place Nation Wrestling Network, Mr. Sean Kidd. Sean, how are you tonight?
Good evening, Andy. I am looking forward to speaking about my favorite all-time comic book character and how he fights off rubber sharks from ladders when he's approaching a boat. So very looking forward to this show tonight.
Yes, it's a lot of fun. And well, thank you for being here. We know you're a big Batman fan. You're a big comics guy. You read a lot. You and Scott are the big nerds, so to speak, on this. And saying that in affectionate term, who really dive deep into this character and knows his Rose Gallery and everything like that.
I think I'll take that as a term of endearment.
Yeah. I'm taking it as a compliment, Sean. Yes. So.
Yeah, I'll roll with that. I'm good.
Mm-hmm. So let's kind of just go around and talk about our initial thoughts. We're going to start with Batman. That's all it's called. It was just called Batman from 1989, directed by Tim Burton, starring Michael Keaton. Actually, Jack Nicholson got top bill as the Joker, and Michael Keaton, Kim Basinger, Robert Wool. Let's kind of go around. We'll start with Sean, who's our esteemed guest tonight. What are your initial thoughts about Batman, the picture?
You know, I want to go back to when it first came out. So I was, you know, in 89, I was, 16? Mm-hmm. And the first thing that struck me is when they announced like Nicholson as Joker is fine. It's perfect. I'm a huge Nicholson guy, so that was great. But Keaton was weird for me because, like, I remember Keaton from, like, Mr. Mom mm-hmm. and comedies, and I just thought that was weird casting. But in the end, I think he made a great Batman, and I love this movie. Like, this, for me, this is kind of the quintessential Batman movie, and we can talk about all the different movies we want, but this kind of brought him to the mainstream big movie dance, and I think it's an amazing movie for me.
Yeah.
There's just so much I could talk about.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. We're around the same age, and I remember when they cast Michael Keaton, you know, known primarily as a comedic actor between Mr. Mom, Gung Ho, the one with him and Henry Winkler, Night Shift. I mean, yeah, everybody was kind of like, nowadays you see that kind of casting all the time, and it tends to work. But back then, yeah, and Nicholson was such a huge, huge star. This is peak Nicholson time.
And that's a big get. Like, for a major movie about Batman, to get Jack Nicholson as a Joker at that time frame was a huge get.
Yeah, he was just off Terms of Endearment, Witches of Eastwick, and Prince's Honor. So he was like, I mean, you know, you talk about younger Jack Nicholson, like Chinatown, that kind of stuff, and Cuckoo's Nest, but this was the 80s Jack Nicholson. The caricature he was becoming of Jack Nicholson. So, Scott, what are your initial thoughts about Batman, the movie?
I saw this for the first time when I was 3 or 4, which was not in 89. But I was watching it as around that time. I remember watching like Batman the Animated Series. I had all the little action figures that were, you know, the little Batman and the Batmobile. So, you know, growing up, you know, Keaton was like just one of the things. Like, I just thought Batman was everywhere. Like, I grew up in, you know, by the time I remember, there was already 2 movies out. Forever was about to come out, and then, you know, Batman and Robin. So he was always in like the zeitgeist of media for me, and, you know, I just ate it up. Like, even Master of the Phantasm, I have that on DVD. I remember watching that on VHS as a kid, but watching this again through adult eyes, because it had been many years since I'd seen it, I was blown away at how good it was. Just, you weren't expecting it, because as we'll talk about with the show tonight, like, the first 2 start off great, even though the second one's really dark with some of the lines. And then the 3rd and 4th movies are just so much geared towards kids. Because I remember watching, and we'll get to it, watching the other ones as theaters as a kid and just loving it. And, like, watching it back, like, oh my goodness. But I think Keaton is, you know, maybe 1 or 2 for Batman's for me behind Bale or in front of Bale. It just depends on the day. But, yeah, it was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Eric, what about you? What are your initial thoughts on this film?
My initial thoughts are it's just great. Like, it's a movie I certainly grew up with most of my life. It came out when I was like 5, so of all these like original 4 movies, I didn't get a chance to see any of them in the theater. So this is all like growing up. In your VHS, like going to your Blockbuster and such, but no, it just really just stands out so much. I think it's probably, I probably saw this like before even like the 60s TV show Batman, all the camp. Like, this is just a dark, serious, like Batman,
mm-hmm.
and just like, you know, everything about it, like just this style, weird, like stylized world, like this whole unique place that is Gotham. And obviously, like, Nicholson's Joker is just like, it's a standout. Like, you cannot, like, you can think a lot of things about the performance, but like, I think it's fantastic, and like, you can never forget it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like one of the best like performances like in film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we you know, at the time we hadn't seen a really good superhero movie, I think, since like Superman 2, I want to say.
Don't knock Superman 3. I'm kidding.
I'm going to say, I was like, what?
No, I'm messing with you. Go ahead.
So, but also, you know, Sean kind of also remember this too. Tim Burton was also a head scratcher a little bit for the director, because he hadn't, I mean, he did Beetlejuice. He had done Edward Scissorhands, but he, like, you know, for him to get Batman, such a huge character and a huge franchise, that was kind of a, you know, people were questioning it a little bit. I mean, it wasn't like, you know.
I question it. Like, so the Batman, Andy and I, we grew up at the same time. So the Batman we remember is, you know, the Batman we'll talk about later for the TV series from 66. I grew up on the Filmation cartoons. I grew up on Batman Super Friends. So
yes.
So when this movie opened and the imagery and the buildings and the scenery and the just dark Gotham, like, it blew my mind away, because I had never seen anything like this in the Batman universe. And if you think about it now it's kind of the quintessential Batman universe. Like, this movie set the tone for decades to come and what Batman would look like on screen.
Well, yeah. And it's a juxtaposition to the other characters. I mean, I just finished playing DC Villains, the Lego game, and it's like Gotham and Metropolis right next to each other. Gotham is dark and it's raining constantly. Metropolis is bright and airy. It kind of sets the tone of the character now. And I'm not a big comic guy at all. But for me to recognize that, you know, it's pretty cool. But so let's kind of like dive into the movie, though, a little bit. So we really don't get the Thomas and Martha murder, thankfully. Very quick, you know, origin. We get a very fast intro to Batman, where he, you know, gets the crooks and he tells them, you know, scares them to kind of get the word spread. And he says, "I'm Batman," which is highly quoted. And Jack is such a cocky prick, which is great. So let's just kind of talk about, though, some of the rest of the cast, because everybody talks about Nichols and everything. Jack Palance as Grissom. Incredible, because I think City Slickers had already come out. So
No,
City Slickers?
City Slickers, like another year or so.
Another year.
Yeah, City Slickers out a year after this.
This is the same year as Tango and Cash.
All right. So, yeah, he wasn't – Jack Palance wasn't as known to younger viewers of movies yet. So, I mean, him, though, as Grissom, I'm my number one guy. I mean,
and he liked a deep breath. Yes. Yeah, he's great casting for him as well. Like, he was perfectly cast, too.
Mm-hmm. And we had Robert Wohl as Knox, and we had, I didn't write the actor's name down, but Lieutenant Eckhart, a nice greasy slimeball cop. Bob Kane, you know, on the drawing, on you see on one of the things. Vicki Vale, as Kim Basinger. This is probably her peak hotness as well.
So I will kinda agree with that.
Kind of go around. Scott, talk about some of the actors in some of the, let's say, minor roles in this movie. Or supporting roles. Let's just say that, supporting roles.
I liked how with Robert Wohl's character, he wasn't played to be a bumbling idiot. He was actually on the right case, right trail with like everyone like basically shitting on him for going after, because Batman isn't really known in this movie at the beginning, but like he's like on the case, knows there's a real Batman. I liked Kim Basinger's Vicki Vale. Vicki Vale is also a nice little comic character, and I was just blown away by her beauty in this movie. I texted in our little mini group chat and how I was just like, I was just wowed because I hadn't really seen her in that many movies. Billy Dee Williams as Harvey Dent, I thought that was a nice little thing to slide in there, as him being Harvey Dent. William Hookins as Eckhart, who we talked about before. Mm-hmm. I do like that the Alfred stays the same through the whole time, Michael Gow. So he's pretty good. You know, Alfred, that's always been Batman's number two, has always been Alfred. Jack Palance, I thought that was the guy from Home Alone. So I thought it was the guy in that little mini movie that they have in Home Alone. I just learned that that wasn't him, but I thought that was him for the longest time up until about 30 seconds ago. But
no.
I enjoyed.
Did you ever see Cops and Robinsons with Chevy Chase? He's in that.
Yeah. Oh, okay. But yeah, it was a great cast. And looking back, like, you know, some of these people had careers before and some, you know, didn't, and some launched it. But yeah, I enjoyed it. And I did like going back to the beginning, Andy, with like you see a family walking with their son after the movie's coming out. And, you know, in the back of my head, I was thinking, oh, wow, we're actually going to see Batman's origin.
You know what, Scott? I had that written down, too. Like, I thought that was going to be the origin. So I thought that was a nice little twist that it wasn't. Yeah. So that was pretty cool.
Good fake out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Good fake out.
Yeah, so I enjoyed that a lot because, you know, by this point, we've been down this road with Batman Begins, with the Batman vs. Superman movie, and, you know, any comic or animated book or animated show you've seen, we all know Batman's origin story one way or another, even if you're not really into comics. But that was a great psych out. But, yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah, and also you mentioned Alfred Goh is consistent. Also, Pat Hingle as Commissioner Gordon, he is consistent throughout the four movies as well. Eric, what are some of your thoughts on the supporting players in this movie?
Yeah, it's a really good cast. I mean, you know, with hindsight, knowing like more and more about these people from their other work, certainly seeing William Hookins, aka Porkins, from the first Star Wars, I always think it's always Porkins to me. I would have thought I got a pop from you guys.
I'm not a Star Trek guy. Sorry, you got
Star Wars.
I'm sure if Chris Carlo listens, right, he'll pop.
Okay. He's one of Luke's TIE Fighter buddies who gets.
Oh,
killed.
He's the. Oh, that's. Oh, wow. Yeah, he's here the. Yeah, he's red, whatever.
Red 4, Red 5.
Red 4, yeah. He was the heavy set X-Wing fighter pilot.
By his name, Porkins.
Okay.
So yeah, I like Robert Wohl. I was a big fan of Arliss later on, his HBO show. Mm-hmm. I think he's really good in this. He could feel like he's from a different movie. you feel like he's from like the later films, but he actually is pretty good the way he plays it. Like, he's not like over the top or obnoxious, but he's like he's very good at what he does, and he's on the case. Alicia. I didn't realize that was Jerry Hall. She was like Mick Jagger's longtime girlfriend. She was like Joker's girlfriend who like he disfigures.
Well, I mean, I think that was their maybe. I don't know if she's from the comics or not, but you know, maybe she was an attempt at Harley Quinn. I don't know.
No, there was Harley Quinn back then. Yeah.
Harley Quinn was in the animated series.
Oh, okay. So Harley Quinn doesn't come in for a while.
No, a few more years than that. So, but no, I certainly, Billy Dee is certainly the big one. It's like a little bit of Harvey Dent. Like, he's not in the movie enough. Like, he very much disappears, like, in the third, the second half of the movie. So I wish we saw more, considering we don't get to see him again. Until like the Lego Batman movie, we find Place to Face.
Ah, okay.
And of course, we gotta give credit to Tracy Walter as Bob the Goon. Mm-hmm. Yeah, his number one guy.
And he does not have one line the entire movie, which I didn't. I sat there and I really started tuning into that. I'm like, why is Bob not? But does Bob never talk in this movie? And I realized he doesn't have one line in the movie.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm thinking from other stuff I've seen him in, but I'm fairly sure he at least had a couple lines.
No, I don't remember him saying anything. Okay. Sean, what about the supporting players for you?
So I'm going to make this really simple. I thought the casting for pretty much every part was great. I wasn't real familiar with Robert Uhl, and he kind of annoyed me a little bit because he's kind of that annoying reporter guy, but I go back to, I can't remember who said it, might have been Scott or Eric, who, you know, he's right about the bats, so he doesn't come across as this big idiot goof, and they make fun of him, but he's really on to something, so I did like that. I think Kim Basinger as Vicki Vale was great casting. She, again, peak hotness. If you want to go back to 9.5 weeks for super peak hotness, that's the one I remember her from growing up before this movie. Like I said, Jack Nicholson's great. I mean, just the whole supporting cast, I think it turned out really great. You can go back and watch it now, and it still holds up, and the cast is phenomenal. And Jack Nicholson should have won an Oscar for his portrayal of Joker. Yeah. He was so great. So.
I think, you know, at that time, up until recently, there was that criticism of comic movies. You know, we definitely saw it in the mid-2000s, and the MCU universe, and Logan brought apart, like, oh, these movies can be great because, you know, for years they were just like, oh, he's just cashing in for a comic movie, and that's probably what they thought at the time. Like, I'm sure if we went back and looked, we'd see stuff, but he definitely should have at least been nominated for, you know, one of the things with the Batman movies I bring up, he should have been at least the lead actor or supporting actor. Nicholson should have.
I agree. But,
well, he's definitely the headliner because he's names above even Keaton's. He is the biggest star. And he had the best deal of all because he took a small pay cut. Like, he only took $6 million for this movie, but he got like a cut of like the film and his own merchandise. I think before inflation, he's probably made up to around $90 million from this movie alone. The same amount of money. And yet he committed to it. Like, once he was in on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, another thing that you can actually consider almost a character is the great set design as well. I mean, the Axis Chemical set alone. I don't know. I'm from, you know, I go to theme parks all the time, and, you know, they have a deal at Six Flags with Warner Brothers, and the Batman roller coaster is actually set in Axis Chemicals. So you kind of have to walk through it to get to the ride, and it's almost, I would imagine, almost not sort of like being there. But Sean, now in terms of the set design, we touched on it a little bit earlier with it being dark, but you know, that really is almost a character itself, don't you agree?
Well, it is, and like I said, it wasn't your typical Batman that I remember or that we grew up on. So at first it was a little stunning to see him, like, you know, look at this architecture on these buildings, look at these sets. you know, it was just so dark. And I guess I call it gothic. And I think we all know at this point it's very what I call Burton-ish, because this is his kind of scenery in almost every movie he makes. You know, I call it a Burton trope is what I wrote down. And we'll see more Burton tropes in the next movie. But, yeah, I think it's visually it's stunning. The sets look great. The architecture looks great. I think it looks. I think Gotham looks like a damn cool city. Actually, it looks great.
Yeah. All the money's on the screen. Sure.
Yes. I think it's all
like
there.
The biggest. This is the biggest budget Warner Bros. At the time putting into a movie.
Yeah. Another thing about this movie, though, is the great one-liners. Something that goes in the other direction later on in the franchise. I mean. One of my favorite lines, and it's kind of a throwaway too, is when they were in the in Bruce Wayne's mansion, and Vale and Knox get lost, and they're like trying to figure out, you know, where this I'm the king of the Wicker people, and you know, Bruce Wayne comes in, and he goes, it's Japanese, and he goes, how do you know? He goes, because I bought it in Japan. So that's a great throwaway line, but then you get like, you know, where they get a load of me? Oh, I got a live one here. Scott, what are some of your favorite lines in the movie?
Well, the Joker one I said at the very beginning, mm-hmm. which I love. And also one where Joker says that this town needs an enema. And I wrote, I thought this was Gotham and not Pittsburgh.
Yeah, you know what? Damn you. I had that same note. We get out of my mind. That's my head now. Damn Bret Hart.
Yeah, so I love that. And... you know, just, and most of them are having to do with Joker, with just like how he's just perfectly evil. And, you know, he goes, you're insane. And he goes, I thought I was a Pisces. I thought that was a good line. It's just great. Like, you know, and Bruce, like, it's not really any lines that Bruce says, but Keaton does a great job of playing aloof Bruce Wayne, which you see sometimes in these movies, but not a lot, because most of the time the movie's not really about Bruce Wayne or Batman. It's about the villains. Mm-hmm. But like Keaton's like, oh, what do you mean? What's going on and everything? And it reminded me of a scene in The Dark Knight Rises. No, Dark Knight Turns, when Joker's threatening to kill one of the guys who was going to say who Batman was, and like Bruce to save the day runs his car into like the police escort, and Gordon's like, why were you doing that? Were you doing it to help us? And Bruce's like, what are you talking about? I was just trying to get to where I'm supposed to go. And he's like, you don't know what's going on. So, like, it's just one of these things where, like, you know, Bruce has to play like he's, you know, smug and arrogant when, you know, he knows everything that's going on. But, yeah, and also a little bit later on, the I made you, you made me lines that the Joker and Batman say to each other on their final fight, I thought it's a great one-liner. And it's showing the symbolism of their coexisting beef, because I think Joker's the best Batman villain. But yeah, that's there's a bunch more, but yeah, that's the main ones off the top of my head.
All right. Eric, what are some of your favorite lines from this movie?
You forgot the obvious one, which I think was in all the commercials. Where does he get those wonderful toys? Mm-hmm. When he escapes the museum with Vicki Vale?
Yeah, as said in Mallrats, where Jay says, "Sound Bob, where do you get those wonderful toys?" When they escape from the security guard.
Oh my God! Yeah, for sure. That's obviously it's gonna show up in Mallrats, like as well as his own Batman montage when he's.
Fly, fat ass, fly. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know. I was going to get into a thing, but like we can save that for a future episode. It's actually, you know what? It's done. We'll find a way to fit it in. It's not a blockbuster. We'll find a way. But it's wonderful. I mostly just think of Joker quotes. Boy. I'm drawing a blank. I should have wrote them down. That was my thing. I did not write enough of these down.
All right.
But no, it's just so many wonderful quotes. Mm-hmm. And just a lot of understated comedy, obviously, even from Joker and even from Bruce, at just Batman as Bruce. Which is an interesting thing.
Hmm? Now go ahead, finish your thought.
Oh no, like, it's interesting, like, in this world, like, everyone, like, knows, like, sort of who Bruce Wayne is, but it's not like he's, like, a big celebrity. Like, he's not, like, a celebrity billionaire. Only Zero goes to his house. Nobody knows who he is. Like, that is an indication compared to, like, you see, like, The Dark Knight, where he's playing up the, like, big, bombastic, like, aloof playboy.
Yeah. Well, one thing that, you know, as we said, well, it has to do with Jack Nicholson really goes all in on the Joker character. I mean, he really, you know, envelops it and just personifies the manic and has those great deliveries. Sean, what are some of your favorite lines from this movie?
Most of them have already been said. And I mean, this town needs an enema is my favorite. There's actually, it's not even a quote, it's a scene, I'm trying to remember what it was, where I guess when he's like sitting there and he just goes, oop, and he's just looking at the camera and he's just like, he's making these faces and making these noises. I like the scene where he first sees the makeup and he breaks the glass, or he first sees his face, he breaks the mirror and he just starts cackling and running out. So it's not just the quotes for me, it's just his whole embodiment of the character of who the Joker is. Like, the quotes are great, but even his mannerisms, his body language, his facials, I mean, he just nailed Joker to a T.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he takes down the Batwing with a very large gun. A handgun.
Yeah, it's just
with
the
a
Jokerisms in general, right? Yeah. It's just so good.
Yeah. I mean, and he brutally murders three mob bosses.
Oh, yeah, that hand buzzer gag is something else.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the dance in the office when he was shooting Jack Palance. He was sitting there doing a dance with the gun. I got a kick out of that. That was funny.
And how he just shoots Bob out of nowhere. Bob, give me your gun. And just shoots him.
Oh, poor Bob. I felt bad for
poor
Bob.
Poor Bob.
But, you know.
I did. I wish he could have been saved, like Knox. Because Knox was originally killed. We got hit by that car.
Mm-hmm.
He was supposed to have died. But I guess the producers liked him. They liked his performance. They kept him alive.
Yeah. And then, one thing that they show, but they don't really mention, you know, Batman is a great detective. And the fact that he cracks the Joker's plan, I guess, in other words, figures out the formula with the, you know, the products. I mean, that's a pretty funny scene once they say, you know, avoid these hygiene products. And you see the news reporters, you know, starting to smell and, you know, look pretty bad. Yeah.
and it looked like shit because
the Joker commercial was really good too, right? So when he's dancing around with the shopping cart, you know, that's a really great scene as well. Another great Joker scene.
Yeah, I call it the Joker infomercial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
with superimposed mouths on faces.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of iconic shots as well in this. I mean, the Batwing goes up to the moon. What'd you guys think of the Prince music? Again, now this is also peak Prince, and he appeared. I remember he appeared on Saturday Night Live, and I believe he got paid an insane amount of money to perform with the Batman logo behind him on that show as a huge promotional tool. So, what did you think of the Prince music, Eric, in the movie?
I thought that was pretty good, and I admittedly, and this probably shocked people, I'm not a big Prince fan. I've never really got, like, vibe to his stuff completely. Mm-hmm. But, it works. It's actually two things about the music. One is obviously all the songs done by Prince, because he did, like, a whole album's worth of songs. And two is, you know, the great music from Danny Elfman. And this is sort of the thing with, like, you think about it, it's like, this is Burton's third film, like, based on the success of Pee-wee's Big Adventure and Beetlejuice, he's given this big project, and he's already has his regular setup. Like, Danny Elfman, the guy from Oingo Boingo, is doing the soundtrack, and it's fantastic. Like, the score is so, like, great. Like, it's in it pretty much in all these movies at this point, all the four going forward. Am I wrong on that?
Yeah, no, Danny Elfman. I think he's in there the whole time.
Yeah.
Well, the non-Prince music is iconic. I mean, when you hear that music, you instantaneously, it's Batman. That's what that music does for Batman. It's like cult follow it. It's like the minute you hear it, you know who it is.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I certainly, back to Prince, I certainly enjoyed the song Quit the Trust, for the whole museum sequence. That's a fun tune. That's just a nice fun thing to dance around to if you're doing vandalism.
Yes, it was very good. Sean, now you remember at the time how big a deal it was with the Prince soundtrack?
I do, and I actually had the album, and at the time I was a big Prince guy and I enjoyed the music. I think I was in my car listening to a Sirius Satellite on the 80s channel, and Bat Dance came on probably about 2 months ago, and I think I was in a group chat when I said, "Hey, this song kind of sucks." And I think so I didn't remember, but I do still like, I think Eric said it, I still like the song Party Man from the museum because that's an iconic scene. So I like that song by Prince, but the rest of it, I can do without. I'm more into the actual other music that I talked about, but yeah, it's okay. Party Man's a good one. The rest of it can kind of go away. I'm not a big fan of it.
Yeah.
But at the time I was, so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Scott, what's your thoughts on the music in this movie?
So I didn't realize that Prince had done the whole album for it until talking with you guys about it.
Apparently there's two albums. One is only Prince.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's one Prince, like, and then there's one with the other. Yes.
With the Elvin stuff.
Yeah. Interesting. But like, I like the, was it the Prince song when, you know, when Joker's putting 20 million on the ground? That's a Prince song when he's dancing around with that, right? Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that song.
Yes.
I'm not sure what song that was, but I enjoyed it because I just love the whole scene when, you know, Nicholson, going back to Nicholson being Joker, I know we've been harping on it. He does a great job of being crazy Joker, but then, like, he can flip that switch and be killer Joker. So he's just great in that scene, dancing around like a fool and everything, but you know he's about to kill everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could use more Jack Nicholson dancing. His dance scenes in this were awesome.
Yes. Oh, yeah, especially, like, you know, with the statue and all that, with the baton. Yes.
Yeah, when he busted into the museum with the baton, that's really, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's the only one that's got any kind of rhythm during the parade. The henchmen are horrible.
Well, there's that one little henchman with the little paintbrush that jumps back and forth going to the painting. And I always hated that guy. I don't know why, but he's always fucking.
Yes, he's an,
he's an idiot.
One thing I noticed, and Sean can appreciate this, was for a action, you know, photojournalist, Vicki Vale never wears the right shoes. She is constantly having to discard her heels and run around almost barefoot.
Yeah, you know how I feel about that.
I'm the same way.
Yeah. Put on some real shoes, woman. Get some shoes.
Yes. So we get to the end. We get to the climax. Scott, what'd you think of the final scene in this movie with that ultimately leads to the Joker's death?
I enjoyed it. It was like a video game, sort of. Like, Batman has to start at the ground floor and work his way through Joker's henchmen, which you see while Joker's, like, running away, and Vicki Vale's, like, leaving breadcrumbs for Batman to find so he can do it. And what actually brings Joker down is his own hubris. He has to show off at the end, and Batman's able to, you know, attach him to the gargoyle, and the gargoyle drags him down. But I enjoyed it. I enjoy, like, the different goons Batman had to fight. Like, he does it different ways, which, you know, is kind of funny, but it's also serious. And at the end, with you seeing the bat signal, finally, it's like, oh, we're going to have a franchise now, guys, which I'm not sure what the thinking was when the movie came out, if it was going to be a sequel or one-off, but they definitely left clues if it was going to be a sequel, like with the Harvey Dent stuff and everything, to huge Batman fans. But I just enjoy it. The one nitpick I would have is I wish Joker and Batman fought a lot more, because, you know, that was seemed like a quick scene. Like, Batman, you know,
it's like what, like a minute and a half, 2 minutes, right? Something like that.
It's like, it's like a 20-minute scene. Batman takes 18 minutes and 50 seconds to get up there and has a minute 10 just to fight him, and they spend 30 seconds of it basically confirming who they are to each other.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, Batman does get him because he's smarter than everyone, but it's like, there's no, like, hand-to-hand combat, really. But it was a nice thing. It's sad that he had to take out Joker in the beginning, but if they were thinking this was a one-off, it would make sense for him to die. So, mm-hmm. But I enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, once we get to the end of Batman Robin. I will mention that there was actually plans to bring back the Joker in a way, but I'll talk about that. I don't know if you guys know about that at all, but
yes.
So we'll chat about that though later. Sean, what do you think of the climax of the movie?
So I enjoy him fighting with the flunkies, and here's what's great about Michael Keaton. Like, he's not like Batman is so stiff when he fights. Like, when I watch him fight, he's very stiff. It's a lot of arm blocking, a lot of kicks, but his main body stays in place the whole time. It's just his arms and his legs, and he just moves, and it's so like quick. And but it's almost like stiff. So the way he fights is really unique in his suit, I think. I love the ending with Joker. It reminded me of Hans Gruber falling out of the building in Die Hard. And one of my favorite scenes ever. But I will tell you the one thing that did bug me about that, when he fell, the animation cartoony did not look good. The animation when he fell looked really, really bad. But what I do like is the scene where he's like at the end, where you see that his laughing thing going off. And you just hear the and he's just lying there. I think that was a great finishing sequence. So I totally enjoyed the end of this. Mm-hmm.
Eric, what's your thoughts on the end of the movie?
It's pretty good, actually. Obviously, like, Batman has to climb up all those stairs because he doesn't have enough slack for his batarang, or whatever you want to call it, to shoot up and go all the way up there. Like, cathedral. It's a very long, steep. But it definitely, you guys were talking about the fight scenes. I guess it's kind of a problem. It's a thing about the suit. Like, he can't really move around that much, so he doesn't like have a lot of fight scenes. Otherwise, it's guys coming to him and him like blocking and such, because he can't move himself unless he has to move his whole body, or just the way the suit works, I guess. But you don't really even notice it too much because you're so engaged like with the characters and everything going on in the movie. Mm-hmm. But I do. Here's the question: where do those henchmen come from? Because he didn't plan to go up there. That was just all improv. Like, he's railing his helicopter, picking up there in 10 minutes. But he already has goons at the ready. Anyone think about that?
No, I didn't really know. It didn't really pop to me, yeah.
Yeah. But no, I enjoyed it. Obviously, it's a quick thing for them. Because I think it's pretty obvious, like, Batman could take him in a legitimate fight at this point, like just a fisticuffs. So it's all like Joker having to like, you know, be sneaky or like use, you know, a gun and such. But he almost gets him. He almost throws him and Vicky over the cliff. It doesn't quite work out for him. Tying his foot to that gargoyle, like, yeah, that's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well. And you guys could back up. Now, Joker has never been portrayed as any kind of physical threat. It's all, you know, mind games, weapons, all that, right? Am I right in that that statement, Sean and Scott?
For the most part, he doesn't get too physical. He's mostly knives, guns, shoots people. He's just a violent, violent guy.
Yeah. Acid. Which he doesn't use. He had that acid right there. He wasted it on the bell.
Yeah.
Crowbar in Jason Todd's case.
Ooh.
Yeah, the crowbar with Jason Todd.
Mm-hmm. All right, anybody have any final thoughts on this initial Batman movie outing?
Just amazing. You should go out of your way to see it if you haven't seen it.
And even if you have, go back and watch it again, because you'll pick up on stuff you haven't picked up on before. It's just amazing. It holds up today. It's really great. Mm-hmm.
So it was such a huge box office success. Of course, we get a sequel in 1992, Batman Returns. And this time, you know, they add two villains now, which sort of becomes a staple of the Batman movies. Michelle Pfeiffer joins the cast as Selina Kyle, a.k.a. Catwoman. And Danny DeVito joins as Oswald Cobblepot, a.k.a. the Penguin. Now, talk about Michael Keaton casting. The Danny DeVito casting was kind of, people were taken because he hadn't really been doing anything dramatic. You know, he had been, you know, he's Louis De Palma from Taxi, or he's, you know, in movies like Romancing the Stone, and he's always in the comedic part. And he did such a transformation. I mean, it was incredible makeup and costume jobs, but it was just he was unrecognizable in the role. Whereas Jack Nicholson, you still saw it was Jack Nicholson, but he was, you know, Jack Nicholson amped it up, you know, and being the Joker. This was just like, if you didn't know any better, you would not have recognized Danny DeVito in that makeup. Sean, do you agree with that statement?
I agree, and I actually thought when I heard DeVito was cast as the Penguin, I thought it was brilliant, because in the comic books, I mean, so the Burgess Meredith Penguin we're used to, he's not really the stigma or the typical Penguin. The casting of Danny DeVito was really good because he was short, he was stocky, he was a little bit overweight, well, a lot overweight, and he was more aligned with what the Penguin was, so I thought it was genius casting, actually, when they cast him for this.
Yeah. Scott, what about you? In the also, throw in your Michelle Pfeiffer initial thoughts as well.
Oh. Sean, you want to go back to the Michelle Pfeiffer one?
Again, genius casting with Michelle Pfeiffer. I mean, she was definitely hot at the time. And, you know, she made a great Catwoman as well. I think she was another great casting. I'll talk about Vale later because she just kind of disappears. But I thought Michelle Pfeiffer was another stroke of genius. Like, I think they got the casting in this really good, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Like I said, when I watched this, I was, you know, a little bit older, 5 or 6. I mean, in 92, I was 3, but I didn't watch it then. But, I, you know, when I see Penguin now, I think of Danny DeVito. That's how much it's imprinted that, because with the Batman, the animated series, they kind of had him round and rotund as well. And, you know, when they had the Gotham TV show, the Penguin wasn't really that at first. Like, he just had like an odd walk. Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman, I thought was great. That was supposed to be Sean Young. Sean Young, that's the time when
she auditioned.
Not only did she audition, she like campaigned, like literally appeared on Letterman in a Catwoman costume and called out the producers.
And she probably wouldn't good because Sean Young is batshit or was batshit crazy at the time.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I really like her as, you know, Selina Kyle, because at first, you know, Michelle Pfeiffer is like bumbling, you know, kind of nervous, you know, a little depressed, obviously, because like those voicemails that she gets, it's like, you know, she obviously has some problems, not wanting to talk to her mom or anything. And then like when she becomes Catwoman, she gets all this like confidence and everything. It's great. And, you know, I really liked, Max Schreck's character, Christopher Walken. I thought he was great in it as like, you know, he wasn't like A and B. He wasn't like the 1A, 1A, 2A. He was like the 1B, like the lower below. Like, he was trying to pull the strings for
Penguin,
and he did a really good job with that. And he was good as a bad guy, and he got his just desserts at the end as well from. You know, because he basically made Catwoman, but it was good. They did a really good job with the casting on this movie, just like they did with the other movie.
I will say one thing: I did like the casting of Catwoman. Her origin in this movie is a whole other story, though. But I can talk about that later.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Eric, what are your thoughts on the additions to this cast?
I think they're pretty good. They're pretty good. Obviously, DeVito is very good casting for Penguin for that point of that type of film, this type of film, that is. Apparently, let's keep reading, Annette Bening was originally cast as Catwoman and then had to pull out because she got pregnant. And Michelle Pfeiffer was the replacement, which is great because I can't picture Annette Bening doing this, being in this type of movie at all. Like, I just can't.
Maybe at the time she could. Maybe at the time.
I don't know.
Maybe.
I could see her as Selina Kyle, but I can't see her as Catwoman.
Yeah. I can't make do with it. But definitely, this is the thing to bring up. This is a movie with essentially two villains. I guess Catwoman is technically a villain, but you also have Max Schreck. He's technically the third villain. But the movie works. Like, it works in all these different characters and gives them enough equal time, which is a big problem with the next two, because they obviously do not. Like, it just, one villain is far more showcased than the other. and it just it doesn't work. But no, I think it definitely works with the Penguin's origin, as very dark as it is. And this is the thing with the movie. This is a very, very darker movie than the first one. To the point where it definitely upset people and cost them a McDonald's sponsorship.
Yeah.
Especially with the beginning. Like, Penguin's origin starts out this movie with his parents literally egging him in cage because they're so horrified by him. And then he gets thrown into the river.
That's okay, Eric. There was another fast food restaurant to pick up the slack from McDonald's, but we're not going to talk about that.
Yes. But yeah, that is a messed up. I mean, they basically abandoned him in the middle of the winter.
Crazy messed up. It's like depressing. Like, the opening sequence is almost horrifying with Pee Wee Herman as his father.
Yeah, and Diane Salinger, who played Simone in Pee Wee's Big Adventure, that was some, keeping Tim Burton, keeping it in the family, so to speak. In that scene. Yeah, and then he's underground for 33 years
with his zoo penguins.
Yes. And then,
I think he's under the ground the whole time because we learned part of his origin story. He joins that circus. He's in the traveling circus of the Red Triangle Gang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love Christopher Walken as Max Schreck. You know, any time where he gets to be over the top, Christopher Walken, where, you know, he does the Christopher Walken, you know, suddenly, Kyle, you're fired.
With his crazy hair.
With that, yeah. Love the hair. Yeah. Then he has this kid who looks like, you know, maybe, you know, Max Schreck's wife slept with Arnold Schwarzenegger. What's going on here? I mean, he looks nothing like him, and he sounds nothing like him.
You know who that kid is? He went on to play Leatherface in the Michael Bay remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre and its own prequel. Mm-hmm. Later on, mm-hmm. And he's mostly being a silent actor.
And you mentioned the Red Triangle Gang. They have a great entrance. They just come in and just start messing stuff up with the whole, the snow princess or ice princess, whatever you want to call her, who's very hachi-machi, by the way. The great Vincent Schiavelli is a member of the gang, one of the lieutenants, if you will. Because there's a few of them who are, of that gang. I mean, you don't mess with the dog lady, because she seems like the one that'll mess you up the most. And then one thing I noticed, and I never realized before, was that the rubber duck that Penguin rides around in later, those were the Skytram cars from the zoo, which I never put two and two together when I'm watching the movie.
I never put it together either. Mm-hmm. I didn't either. Oh, wow. Yeah, I even had a note about where did he get the damn duck thing.
Yeah.
So now, thank you for clarifying.
I was wondering how he was funding this whole operation.
I was wondering, getting
all the rockets.
Well, yeah, and then how he's designing his umbrellas. There's a lot, honestly, with these movies, you do have to suspend your disbelief quite a bit. You know, he does his homework to blackmail Max Schreck.
Yeah, he has a good line when he's talking to him, when he's blackmailing. He goes, "Remember, Max, you flush it, I flaunt it." Which the way he said it was just amazing. I didn't do it justice right there, but that whole little dial-like spiel he had was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Sean, what's your issues with the Catwoman origin story?
All right. So, comic wise, and I go back a little old school, so Catwoman was initially an airline stewardess that turned into a jewel thief. I don't know if you guys knew that or not, but her retro origin that they changed in one of the many different origin when they redo the things of the comics, she was actually a dominatrix and a hooker and a prostitute. Scott, did you know that? I would figure anybody would know. Okay, so you did.
Is that from Frank Miller's run?
It's when they redid her origin. So she was a dominatrix, she was a hooker. Here's the problem I have. She falls out a window after, Schreck pushes her out. And then all these cats come around her, and all of a sudden she's got these cat-like powers. His cats are clawing on her, breathing on her, biting her finger. Then automatically, hey, you know what? I'm alive. All these cats probably back to life. I'm going to go back to my house and figure out how to sew a leather costume and make it look like I'm a cat. I mean, the origin is silly and stupid. It's like they had to force it in there versus taking their time with it, which I understand why they had to do that to get it in there. But I thought that was a really dumb story and hokey, and the costume's great, but the way she made it is like, hey, I just have a random piece of leather in my closet. I'm going to make this costume as silly. That's my problem with it.
I don't quite understand. This is clearly some sort of supernatural thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's not Catwoman, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Although her logic is she thinks she has 9 wives because she's been killed so many times. She hasn't really been killed that many times. I mean, the fall certainly killed her.
Well, it's an ongoing theme in the movie. I have 9 lives. Like, Catwoman does not have 9 lives. In the movie, she does. So
I don't think that falling to the cat litter would have killed her. Anyway, that's just my opinion.
Oh, or falling to that greenhouse.
Or getting shot or anything like that won't kill her. You're right. Or out the window doesn't kill her.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't consider her much of a villain. No, I she's more of an anti-hero, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she didn't want to kill the Snow Princess. She, you know.
Well, that's all always her history. She's kind of that borderline. She's more of a villain on the end of, she's a thief, not a killer. That's really what she is.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, Max, Shrek is technically, like, almost the main villain at times. Because he's certainly, he's getting, Penguin's got one over him, and then he's using Penguin to push his own narrative of his plant.
He's the common denominator between Penguin and Catwoman, I think. That's really where you could say that about him.
And it was brings up an. Sorry, no, go right ahead.
No, go ahead, Eric.
it's kind of a thing. As much as I really like Walken, like this is a replacement character because apparently this was supposed to be Harvey Dent. This kind of thing, like he was supposed to be Billy Dee was back. Like this is like part of like the beginning of putting him into Two-Face. I mean, literally the end of the movie is Catwoman. Gives him a kiss with that shocker, like electrocuting him in the face. Like I think that would have sort of been the thing that turned him into Two-Face.
Ah, maybe.
So, yeah, there's this whole thing that apparently Billy Dee and Marlon Wayans was originally supposed to be in the movie. He was going to be the set for Robin as like a street kid who Batman meets and helps him like fix the Batmobile, and then they're. Both guys were, like, just paid off and, like, just get out of the movie, which is a very weird thing.
Well, Marlon Wayans was paid for the next movie as well.
Really?
Because he had a 2-picture deal, yeah.
Yeah, because they thought he was going to be Robin, which would have been a different choice. Because, really, Marlon Wayans seems to be the actor most from that family, the Wayans family, who has the opportunities to do other stuff. Outside of their comedy.
Hmm. Yeah.
That wouldn't have been too surprising.
Mm-hmm. You know, and then we have a couple of other minor characters show up. We have Jen and Josh, the great Jan Hooks. And Josh is played by Steve Whitten, who we knew as, I think he was on like the Hogan Family or something like that. That's where I knew him from.
The campaign managers.
Yes.
Or whatever
they are. And Oswald definitely wants to bang Jen. So
I can't say I blame him. She's all right. She's not bad.
Yeah.
That sets up like a whole 10-minute thing where I can see why parents got mad. Was this supposed to be a kids movie? Because, you know, he's flirting with the campaign manager, and then he bites the male campaign manager in the nose. And then he goes upstairs and he sees Catwoman and he says, "Just the pussy I've been waiting for." And I'm like, oh,
That whole scene is very uncomfortable to watch. It's very uncomfortable.
So horned up. He is so
horned up. Horny Penguin.
Yeah, and then you got Catwoman giving herself a bath and everything. Yeah, it was. Yeah, and you know we talked about this with the last movie, but yeah, this one is full of great lines as well. I mean, I remember in the one of the lines from the trailer is the Penguin. Ah, the direct approach. You don't really think you'll win, do you? So. You guys have any other favorite lines from the movie?
I don't have as many memorable lines from this one as the first one because I was more I think I was more entrenched in what was going on in this movie because there was so much happening with two different villains. So I was trying to pay attention to things that were going on so I didn't miss anything, so I didn't catch a lot of the quotes.
Well, I mean, you know, when Catwoman comes out, you know, of the right before the explosion and just says meow. I mean, that's a really great delivery of a very simple line. Eric, you have any ones that stand out?
Yeah, she's got a couple here. Life's a bitch and so am I. That's a good line.
That's a good one.
It's the so-called normal guys who always let you down. Sickos never scare me. At least they're committed.
Yes, that's true.
And Penguin's got one. You're just jealous because I'm a genuine freak and you have to wear a mask. And then Batman kind of agrees with him.
Yeah. Scott, you got any lines you want to point out?
Just a couple that I mentioned. And also Catwoman says, you poor guys, always confusing your pistols with your privates.
Yes. I forgot that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
I mean, these lines are definitely better than what we'll get in the future.
Yeah, I'm kind of dreading that. But so,
I want to talk about an unintentionally funny thing, which is reintroducing ourselves to Bruce Wayne in this movie. I mean, when shit goes down at the tree lighting and they send out the back signal, you see what he's doing there. He's just sitting in the dark brooding.
Yeah.
It's very funny. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you got, I want to know, how did they figure out how to break into the Batmobile? That was something that puzzled me.
Well, I think because when Batman throws his batarang, the dog takes it. Mm-hmm. At the very beginning, it's very subtle, and I think they reverse engineered it. At least that's what I took from it, and that's how they were able to break into it.
I think you're right.
Blueprints. They had their own blueprints.
Yeah, that's kind of like what puzzled me, how they were able to recreate the blueprints. And I love the little Batman video game that Penguin's playing. So
yes, that is a fun scene when he's on there and he's talking all that trash and he's like, I'm gonna run this old lady over.
Yeah, if that band's a rocking, don't come a knocking.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like he's sitting there playing like Outrun or something.
Yeah, or Radmobile.
Oh, I love Radmobile.
I only know that because I remember from Encino Man, it's so prominent.
Mm-hmm. Radmobile. You know, and yeah, like they said, they have a great banter between the Bat and the Cat during the Ice Princess rescue or attempted rescue haste. I thought we had something, we did kind of thing, and they pretty much go all in on each other there.
Well, yeah, you know, you have a little, she's grabbing his bat package at one point. There's a lot of stuff going on with these two throughout the movie. Yeah. So yeah,
you know, and then,
but one scene I did like with Selina and Bruce is when they're on their date and they're kissing and, like, you know, they start like touching with each other, but they're trying to keep their wounds away from each other that would like say who they really are. I really thought that was a great scene.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny you bring that up. So I didn't say this about the last Batman movie, but it seems like Bruce Wayne has a habit of wanting to tell the people who he is, especially the women. Like, I don't remember the Bruce Wayne that I grew up with ever wanting to tell people who he is, but now we have in two movies where he's just willing to give it up to both chicks. And that doesn't make a lot of sense. I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Also in the first movie, Vicki Vale gets let into the Batcave without even asking.
Exactly.
So Alfred's just like, hey,
Alfred's pushing that rock up the hill.
And this is an ongoing thing with him. He wants, like, Batman wants to reveal his identity to every single person in every movie we watch tonight.
Yes. Rewatching Batman Returns, I completely forgot they actually mentioned Vicki Vale. Like, there's a reason why she's not around.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, even though she knew his secret, like, his duality, she just couldn't put up with it.
But
I guess
now you have someone out there that knows his identity. It's just weird.
Yeah.
They do that.
I know. And Penguin.
I don't really think of Batman as a sexual guy anyway. Like, he just, you know, he's into beating up crooks. That's his thing.
Yeah.
And Penguin, won't think twice about killing a henchman. You know, that'll teach that big clown to grow a conscience. Just blows him away. You know.
Yep.
Yeah. And then, Selina just whips out a gun in the middle of that party later on. I mean, was there, like, you know, with all this shit going on, they're not going to do any kind of security check here?
One more thing about Catwoman. So,
did
the cats actually teach her how to crack a whip, too? Because that was a random thing where all of a sudden she could crack a whip. So I guess cats do that too. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
I guess she's a quick learner.
Yeah.
Baby.
Another thing I found a little far-fetched was, people will die. You know, but penguins will survive in a toxic waste. You know, that's in the penguin pool or penguin exhibit. You know what I mean? All these penguins just swimming around all fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of, you know, this one you got to suspend a lot of disbelief. The other one for me is the bat plane in the sewer. It automatically just fits in the sewer. And then the sewers, they have the same like architecture as the city above them does. So I'll go live in those sewers. They actually had some pretty good designs in them. So just a lot of far-fetched stuff in it. And the other thing, the one last thing I'll add for this one for me is Burton, the chase trope. So the chase scene when they're chasing the penguin totally reminded me of Edward Scissorhands. So it's like he redid that scene in Edward Scissorhands. So
I didn't think of that, Sean. That's yeah. exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same exact scene.
Well, it just came off of doing Scissorhands, so yeah, it's fresh in his mind.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So what did you think of the ending with the penguin army?
Yeah, it's a little much.
Yeah, the ending's a little much for me. I did. There was a. Did you guys catch the penguin that he had a poop stain in his pants in one of the scenes where the penguins are dragging him in the sewer? He actually had a shit stain in his pants. I just wanted. I couldn't. I know this is a family pod, but I had to mention this.
That's fine.
Yeah. The last third is really just about the degradation of Penguin. He's publicly humiliated. Like, yeah, he just sort of gives up on his humanity. Yeah, gives up on him at a point.
Yeah, it's not really a big finale either. There's not this big fight. It's just a lot of explosions and Bruce Wayne wanting to give up his identity again at the end. It was. I didn't think it was a good ending. I thought it was. I didn't like it.
Yeah, I mean, it was the suicide, you know, bombers, the penguins. Yeah, it was a little. I mean, at the time, you're in the movie theater, like, oh, that's cute, whatever. Then when you like actually stop and think about it, that's when you realize how bad it is. You know, the penguin actually does try to take on, you know, Batman in a fight, which is pretty funny. And then you got Max Schreck, who's a dick to the end, basically.
So, Scott, do you think the big penguin council, that was like insight into the Court of Owls that we would see in later Batman reads, the Court of Penguins?
I definitely think Scott Snyder pulled from that just for that imagery because it kind of looked, it really, you sent me that picture. It was like, does this look familiar to you? Yeah. And I thought it was a panel from the comic book, but it looks just like the Court of Owls. And yep. I was like, what the hell's going on right now? But yeah, I mean, they were definitely pulling from that. And, one thing I will say about Max is we didn't speak about this, but Penguin wants to kidnap all the firstborns. So he wants to take Max's kid that's not his real kid, but he claims it is because it looks like his wife got with Arnold. But but Max goes, no, take me instead. So he does like offer himself up for his son. So like he does have a little bit, but then he then shoots Batman and then shoots Catwoman a lot and then dies by electrocution with her basically kissing them, electrocuting each other. So it's like one step forward, four steps back for Max.
Yeah, and you had the penguin funeral also. That's another thing I kind of enjoy where they kind of like, you know, the only thing that was missing was taps playing as they walk him into the water.
Yeah, that was weird. That whole penguin funeral leading him into the water was just a strange, strange ending.
Yeah, he just came out of the water.
Yeah, so any final thoughts on Batman Returns?
Yeah, they really just half-baked the idea of saying that Batman would be a murderer because never followed up on. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there was one scene that kind of took me back a little bit to the original campy Batman. It was when he was playing Penguin's voice over the intercom when he was trying to sell him out. And he was playing it back and forth like a DJ, and then the disc drive had the bat signal on it. So I don't know. That took me back to the old Batman camp, which we'll talk about later. So I thought that was a cool little thing they threw in there.
Yeah, I have that in my notes, the bat CD player.
Yeah. DJ Wayne and the badass disc drive with the signal on it. That's what I thought.
and also, I don't, like, going back to, like, the Max character, I think that, Sean, he could have just been Simon Stagg. They're basically the same character.
They are there. There's a lot of characters and a lot of stuff in this movie that in later years seems like they integrated in the comic book in different forms. So, and guys, I know we talked about the Court of Owls. If you haven't read the comic in later years, it's a secret society in Gotham that's behind the scenes, and they all wear owl masks. So that penguin scene where they're all doing the penguins at the end, mm-hmm. it looked exactly like the Court of Owls when they would do their little ceremonies. That's why we were talking about that. So I threw that up.
It's also a great story. So
it is a great story, yes.
Yeah. No, I think they integrated that certainly a lot of that into the show Gotham.
Mm-hmm. They did, yes.
A lot of the comic book stuff, yeah, especially No Man's Land for the last season.
I'm actually glad you brought that up. So a lot of Gotham is almost a spinoff of these two movies. Same scenery, kind of the same mood, same dark. So a lot of Gotham. So I'm glad you brought that up. There's a lot of these movies in the Gotham TV series.
All right. So with that, we're going to close the book on the Tim Burton Batman movies. And when we come back, we have a new director and the franchise goes in a different direction with some new Batman casting and new villains. So with Scott Shiflett, Eric Eels, and our guest, Sean Kidd, I'm Andy Afton, Blockbuster Rewind. We'll be right back. Place to Be Nation, welcome back to episode number 4 of Blockbuster Rewind. I'm one of your co-hosts, Andy Afton. We'll get back to talking about the Batman series, Batman franchise from the late 80s into the mid to late 90s in just a moment. But first, let's kind of talk about what's going on here at Place to Be Nation, all of our various feeds, the website, the social medias, over here on the Place to Be Nation pop feed. Lots of great shows, one of my shows, Laughing Theater. The last episode had Rob Kimmler join me for a live watch of Wayne's World. Actually, when you're hearing this, that is not the last episode. The last episode is Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story with Jambalaya Jake Williams. That will be posted just prior, a few days before you hear this. So check that out. Check out It Was a Thing on TV that posts every Wednesday. That is the guys looking at obscure TV shows. We have Diamond Conversations, which is which features Ian. And he has a lot of great guests every week. Don't forget about other great shows here. Matty Souza's A Piece of the Action, with his latest episode was with Jude Wardlaw. And I'm trying to remember what they watched. Top of my head. Commando, that's right. So, yeah, check all that out. Plus, you know, Year and Pop will be back soon. Great Debate will be returning. Looking forward to looking back. May even be coming back at some point once movies start really releasing like at a normal rate. But also don't forget to check out the PlayStation Nation Wrestling Network, which has lots of great wrestling, a deep dive into topics that run the gamut from today's WWE through yesteryear. It features the Place to Be podcast, Main Event, Jenny and the Gems, Body Pressure Luck, PTB NXT, the NWA Saturday Special, NWA Crock and Roll, Highway to the Impact Zone, Chicken Salad, all kinds of fun stuff. If you're a wrestling fan, it is a must listen. And while you're at it, subscribe to Jennifer's Position, Jennifer Smith's the Jenny Position feed as well, the home of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, The Journey Through Infinity, the Brother Sister Rewatch podcast, Bianca's First Time, and much, much more. Also check out the North-South Connection, brought to you by JT Rosero, Chad Campbell, and Aaron George, the home for Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, The Extreme Three-Way Dance, the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast, Carolina Dreaming, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and a couple of shows that used to live here on the pop feed, but have migrated over, and we wish them the best, because they're all tremendous dudes. That is This Week in Football, This Week in the NFL. That is hosted by Cowboy, Roger Morissette, John D'Amato, and Cowboy Sr. And also Rank and File has made a return. That is our friend Jordan Duncan, who is a truly good person, a good dude. So check all that stuff out over on that feed. Don't forget on the social media pages, Greatest Song from a Movie Tournament is still going. You have to be a member of PTBN Tournaments. Group, we're going through the third round and almost into the fourth round by the time you guys hear it. So we've pared down quite a bit. You know, I think we have just around 70 or 80 songs left, all the way down from 512, I believe. What do you guys think of the tournament so far? Some big songs are starting to drop out. Shout just got knocked out by Bohemian Rhapsody. Any other songs that you guys have noticed have gotten out or survived unexpectedly?
I'm upset that Don't Want to Miss a Thing got eliminated in the second round.
That's a tragedy. Like, there's so many songs that got eliminated, it's a tragedy, Andy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, tragedy. I mean, I can't control it. I mean, Facebook changed or got rid of the poll option for pages.
The Russian bots took over it.
Yeah. Well, I actually think I have a theory. I think they stopped it until the election's over. I think that might be it, because I think they don't want to have people posting all stuff. Because in order to vote on a poll, you have to be a member of that group. So it's kind of contained, so to speak.
That makes sense. It's a good
theory. I think so. I don't know. If the Facebook guys are listening to me and you don't hear from me on the next episode, well, maybe I stumbled onto something. I don't know. But don't forget, check out PlaceOfNation.com each and every day. Fresh takes on all kinds of articles. We have Trent's SmackDown Fox Report, This Week in WWE by John Crow, Steve Riddle's Wonderful World of Disney Reviews, Paulie's Perspective, Matt Rotella with his live-action Disney movie reviews, all kinds of fun stuff. So check out PlaceOfNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. So now, a part of the show we've all been looking forward to, the kind of changing of the guard with, in 1995, we have Batman Forever released with a new director, Joel Schumacher, and you could immediately, it's different from just the credits alone. Eric, now you seem to be one who knows about the backstage stories and truth. Do you remember why there was a changing of director in this franchise?
Probably just some backlash from the much more darker tone of Batman Returns, and probably that it didn't make as much money as they would have wanted to as the first one. Uh-huh. So, Burns probably wanted to do a change. I mean, after he did that, he was getting Ed Wood underway, like this big passion project. So, he's still on as a producer, at least. I don't know what that means as a credit. I don't know if he actually did much, but...
Mm-hmm. So, like we talked about, though, with the first Batman, let's kind of talk about the cast. We have Harvey Dent is recast as Tommy Lee Jones takes over the part as he moves into being Two-Face now, which, again, much like Jack Nicholson, he pretty much goes all in on this character. We have Nicole Kidman as Dr. Chase Meridian, which is, I think, is peak Nicole Kidman, Hachimachi, although the character is not great.
total peak Nicole Kidman.
Yes. And Jim Carrey is Edward Nygma, a.k.a. The Riddler. There's more people we'll talk about as we go through this movie, but, it kind of already, it pretty much immediately almost puts a bad taste in your mouth. Because the I'll get drive-through line, why the freak would Batman ever want to say that? That's first of all. But Sean, what are your initial thoughts about Batman Forever, now that I've ranted a little bit?
initially, it sucks. So it's a totally different thing. So it's kind of switched to a hybrid of the camp TV show, kind of mixed in a little bit with the two Batman movies we just watched, but it leans more on the camp side of it, right? So I see where they're still doing some of the, Gotham's still this dark place, still has the architecture, still the scenery, but now we're going to throw the camp into it. So right out of the gate, they want you to know with that whole drive-through thing, this is what you're going to get. This is going to be kind of campy, kind of goofy, not as serious as the last two movies, and they really want you to know that out of the gate up front. So, I hated it because I really enjoyed the first two Batman movies and where they were going with it in terms of the dark Batman. It's such a shift. Plus, you have a new actor, which I'll talk about Val a little bit and how I feel about him. But totally different feeling. Literally in the first 5 minutes, this is not going to be the same universe that you're used to watching the last two movies.
Yeah, I totally forgot. The biggest change was Val Kilmer takes over as Bruce Wayne / Batman. So, Scott, what are your initial thoughts about Batman Forever?
Yeah, it's a complete tonal shift, like you guys were saying. The biggest one is somehow Batman gets stuck in a big-ass safe, or a vault.
Which is like the lightest safe in history, by the way, it seems like.
Has one of my favorite lines from that extra. Oh no, it's boiling acid!
I would have dropped his ass in the acid. He was that annoying.
Which was just like Sean said, they were like toeing the line between like the 60s version and, they were trying to be like, because there is some parts of this where it's pretty sexual, because from the very beginning, Chase Meridian, aka Nicole Kidman, wants that bad D. So,
yeah. Okay, so see, I thought I would be the one to cross the line, so I'm glad you said it first.
Yeah. Well, we can say what it is, you know. Just...
I actually wrote Chase continues the slut run attached to Batman. That's what I put in my notes.
She is certainly the most insane character in this movie with the Riddler and Two-Face.
Very sexual character.
I mean, she turns on the bat light at one point and she's wearing a nightie.
Yeah, yeah, that signal is not a beeper.
Yeah.
Well, if I had a beeper that was a bat signal and I saw Nicole Kim in there, I'd be okay with the use of that. That'd be fine. No problem.
And she's going against her ethical thing. She's like a psychiatrist who's dating one of her patients. Like, what the hell's wrong with you?
I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, but since we jumped right into Chase, like, she's a shrink, right? And she's a shrink with daddy issues. It's very apparent. Like, and she's...
She's such a bitch to, you know. It's funny though. She's like so, like, you know,
she wants both D's, Andy.
She's kind of a bitch to Bruce Wayne for the first half of the movie.
Yeah, he liked it.
Maybe, but she's like, you know, it's a clock matches you, dick. You don't know.
I would even go as far as to say, like, I think she's hotter than Vicki Vale was in the first one. I thought Nicole Kidman was freaking gorgeous in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, getting ahead of myself.
Yeah, I think Scott was talking.
Sorry. Also, and like, so like the very beginning, like, you know, somehow the safe is perusing around Gotham City, and then Gotham has its own Statue of Liberty. What the hell's going on? And
yeah, that was weird. Yep.
Yeah. I'm like, and they crash into it, and, you know, there's so much damage being done, and it's like 10 minutes of the movie. I'm like, this is totally different. You know, you got Two-Face just, you know. I know we might get into this, and I don't know if you guys knew, but Tommy Lee Jones hated Jim Carrey in this movie.
Said
he was a buffoon and everything. But it's like, he was hamming it up just as much as Carrey was.
I don't know if I agree with you on that one.
I think Jim Carrey was being Jim Carrey.
I think Tommy Lee Jones had... Go ahead, Eric. Sorry.
Tommy Lee Jones is more energetic than most of his roles. That's where you can see, like, you think like he's being over the top. He's never this high energy.
I think they called Jim Carrey and said, "Come be the mask," and that's what he did. He's the same exact character in the mask that he's in this.
Well, that's not a surprise because he got cast in this because 1994 he ruled the world. The Mask, Ace Ventura, and Dumb and Dumber all came out in that year, and he became the biggest star in the world.
Here's the shit take for Sean. Sean is not a Jim Carrey fan and never has been, so there's my shit take for the night.
I think Robin Williams wanted the role, but he was too old at that time.
Robin Williams would have been fine in this role, too. But anyway.
Well, also, before we go on to Eric, I have something to admit. For the longest time, up until I saw this movie again, for some reason in my young brain, which was addled with wrestling and superheroes, I thought Michael Hayes was Enigma's boss forever. And I think it was with the slick back hair and the mustache. And I remember, like, just thinking in my head, oh my God, Michael Hayes is in this movie acting. He gets killed. I was like, that's... You know, it's Doc Hendricks, Michael P.S. Hayes.
You think he's going to start singing Bad Street?
I really don't see how one would confuse Michael Hayes and
Ed
Begley Jr.
I don't know if that's an insult to Begley or a compliment to Hayes.
I could see it in the Doc Hendricks character. There's a little bit of symmetry there. I get it a little bit.
With, like, the slick back hair. And
everything.
Well, I think for people that know Ed Begley Jr., we're not used to him having a mustache. Usually he's, you know, with the glasses and the...
Hey, honestly, I didn't even catch it was Ed Begley Jr., so that tells you what. I'll go with Michael Hayes. I'm good.
Yeah,
that's funny. Eric, what are your initial thoughts on Batman Forever?
I got many thoughts. I watched this movie a lot as a kid because, you know, I owned VHS and, like, I didn't know any better. So, yeah, it's entertainment. Like, I own the video, I'm gonna watch it. So it's the tone is just so much. Like, this is the sequel to the Burton Batmans, because obviously because you still have Pat Hengel and Michael Goh as Gordon and Alfred, as little screen time as they have in this movie. So, but yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. It going back to the two villain thing, if this had just been the Riddler, I would have been fine. Even if it is carry like dialed up to 11, I think it just kind of works for this movie, the type of tone they're presenting. So I actually think like Two-Face gets very shortchanged, especially his origin. Like, it's just like, it's a video. You see a videotape of acid being thrown in space. Like, you want to see that. Like, you want to see like, that whole setup.
Immediately jump into it. He's already a villain. There's no context. There's nothing. And then you get a short little blip, like you said in the video, of how he became that way.
Yeah. So, it's a problem. It'll be a problem in the next movie too, for sure. But, it's okay movie. Like, this is a term I hear. It's a good hangover movie.
Okay.
That's when I should have watched it. But...
yeah. So no, it's not like one of the best Batmans for sure. I guess I'm not really big on Val Kilmer. Like, I get that's another thing, is the change of Batman. But like, I don't think he's good in this. No. I don't think he's good. No. I think maybe he's more better as Bruce than Batman. If I'm giving credit.
That's a good point. I agree with you on that, Eric.
He seems very wooden.
Yeah, he's very stiff.
Yeah.
And he's more of a dick. He's kind of a dick in this movie, too. He's not a nice guy. He's very cold, stiff.
Yeah. But he's also much more willing to reveal his identity, as in that carnival sequence. Harvey on Batman! He screams that multiple times. I don't know how nobody hears him.
So he's the worst one. He's the worst one to be doing that. You're right.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, so we also have another change. We had Robin, the sidekick, to this. Scott, what do you think of Chris O'Donnell as Robin on the introduction? Now, how close is the origin story in terms of with the family and all that?
It varies. I know, like, they were the Flying Graysons in the comics, so they kept true to that. I thought it was Joker that killed them, not Two-Face.
Well, Two-Face didn't kill him either. It was just an accident that happened. When he was at the circus, I don't think there was any villains involved in the comic at all. I don't think.
Okay, yeah. I just know it varies. I had a problem with how old is Dick Grayson supposed to be? Because, like...
30.
Because when his parents die, like... spoiler alert, they're killed by Two-Face. But Gordon takes him to Bruce Wayne and is like, he wants to stay... I'm going to let him stay with you for a little bit. And then, like... Dick Grayson's like, all right, I'm leaving now. And Bruce is like, why don't you stay for a little bit? It's like, first off, why does he have to be dropped off by someone if your parents die if you're like 25, 26 years old? Or as Sean said, 30. Like, he doesn't like, you know, they're like, tough shit, man. Well, that's what happens when you come to Gotham. But like, is he supposed to be like 16 or 17 or something? And
I think I think so. I think he's supposed to be in that teenager realm. Yeah.
So that's a little rough because, like you said, Sean, he looks 30. I'm like, but you know, I liked him as Robin as a kid, but it's just a little rough, and I can tell he's like Tom Cruise height just from the way they were shooting him. So I wish they would have had someone else. I would have liked to see Marlon Wayans as Robin. It'd been a different take on it.
Sure. Actual George Gosling-Levitt from 1995 as the actual young Ward.
Yeah. Oh, that would have been good.
That would have been good. That would have been good.
If he wasn't doing Third Rock.
Sean, what do you think of Chris O'Donnell?
I think as we got into the movie a little bit later and we got like the better Robin costume was okay, but the trapeze outfit was ridiculous when they were when he was initially put. Anyway, it looked terrible, the original. I like it when they get like kind of update the Robin costume similar to Batman's. I think it looks better, even though that's not really the way they do it. And I also think it's funny that Alfred decided that, hey, he'd make a great Robin by watching Dick do laundry. And then they automatically said, hey, he'll be a great Robin. So Alfred seems to be like, in these two movies coming up, or the one we're in now and later just seems to be pushing people into the Batman universe where they have no skill sets, and then automatically they can fight and they're good. I guess any of us on this podcast could go and be Batman and Robin if we went to tomorrow.
I tried to do my laundry that way. I just ended up making a mess. Kung fu laundry.
But, you know, I don't think he's bad, but to the point of where he's the age he's supposed to be doesn't make a lot of sense. I didn't think he was bad as Robin. He's just not the proper age to be Robin, and I just see. I like the Joseph. I like the Levitt one. I think that's a great idea. So
he would have been better as a Nightwing.
Yeah, he'd be a great Nightwing. Like, see, him as Nightwing would have been perfect. You're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. He also is very immature, though. Like, that's the thing of his age. Like, he's very immature because he has to find out what's going on in that closet when he's told not to be there, and then he steals the free Batmobile.
You mean when he does parkour like he's John Morrison?
Yeah.
Well, he's a trapeze artist.
Hardcore.
Yeah, that's just what I was saying. I was like, he had parkour. He was doing parkour in the mid-90s.
But let's all be honest, though. If we had the Batmobile and we could joyride in it, we would, too.
Oh, 100%. So,
you know, and the fact is, he's joyriding, and it goes to pick up hookers, which was even better. But that's a whole other story.
Yeah, so we had Don the Dragon Williams as Wilson, I'm sorry, John the Dragon Wilson, as one of the gang members.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was like the head guy. Yeah, he's the, I guess people would have called him the great value Brandon Lee back then.
Yep.
He was running the direct-to-video market.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, him and Cynthia Rothrock were at everything. And so we also have, right when our two villains meet up to team up, we get introduced to Sugar and Spice, Drew Barrymore and Debbie Mazur. That's actually really good casting. I think they were actually perfect. There was very small roles. I mean, you basically have to look good in, lingerie, whatever, but I think they both, exuded what they were supposed to.
I agree. Debbie Mazur, though, I can't get the image of her snorting Coke and Goodfellas out of my head. So every time I see her on screen, I just see a face. I see a face full of Coke on her.
So, can you guys explain to me how they got Drew Barrymore for this bit role?
I think she was a wild child.
90s. I think back then it might have been wild. I think you're right. I think it's the wild child days when she was still kind of coming out of that. Maybe
she was transitioning.
Yeah, okay. She was transitioning back to normal.
I think she had already flashed Lerman by the
She did what Lindsay Lohan wished she could have done. Taking a dark turn and then came out of it much better on the other side.
Also Poison Ivy.
Mm-hmm. I did enjoy the entrance, though, of the Riddler, how he kind of came in his first scene, kind of set the tone a little bit. One thing I had trouble with, though, was the Nigma Tech. I mean, with all the...
Like how soon it came up and how
fast.
He was a billionaire, like, in a day. Yeah.
Because, I mean, are there that many jewelry stores in Gotham that can be robbed? I mean, Nigma Tech is a publicly traded company as well.
In a day. I want that company. Yes. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, let me buy some stock in it.
Did you like Nigma Tech? I felt like it was like from Total Recall. That's really what his technology was. It was like Recall, wasn't it? Like you go in and they wipe your brain and you could do anything you want with their brain. I thought it was kind of a Total Recall copyright infringement gimmick that he was doing for his company. That's what I caught.
Yep. So what do you think of the party scene? I mean, that was one of the good lines from the movie. Your entrance was good. His was better. When they have you can kind of see where the cracks may be in the Two-Face Riddler relationship. What do you guys think of that relationship? I know we spoke about it. Somebody had mentioned how off-screen, but how do you think of it on-screen?
I thought it was weird, but I did like, when Carrie was supposed to be Enigma and his interplay with Two-Face, I didn't like when he was full Riddler. Like, I like that scene where he's like, where you're talking about, like, his interest was good. Your interest was good. His was better, just the way that is. It showed a serious side to him, but then when they got too whimsical and everything, it's like they were trying to do their Jack Nicholson impersonation, and it was failing.
Yeah. No, that's obvious. Like, his performance is sort of haunting this movie.
But the entrance into the party was probably one of the best entrances in any of the movies we've seen. That was a hell of an entrance.
That was a Batman entrance. That was a
great entrance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing that I noticed as well is that they have these devices that work everything. So Batman's got like one remote that does everything in the Batcave. Edward Nygma's cane can do like pretty much every function it ever needs. So I think the tech was a little too convenient.
The thermal cape?
Yeah.
You like the thermal cape? That's one too, right? With the fire and explosion?
I did kind of like, though, the attack on the Riddler's hideout. I remember years ago, I was down in the city at Christmas time with some other couples, and we were at the Warner Brothers store. It was on Fifth Avenue at the time. And we're sitting there on the second floor. All of a sudden, the room goes dark. And they have one of those walls with like all the television screens. They all go up and it's Edward Nygma like doing this. And the bat plane, whatever, comes down from the ceiling and starts going in motion in tune with the scene as it's going on the screen. So I always flash back to that one cool experience with this movie. But what'd you guys think of, between the bat boat and the bat plane going up against, towards Nygma's hideout or whatever you want to call it. What'd you think, Sean?
I like when they introduced the different vehicles, the bat boat, the bat plane. I like the fact they were playing Battleship to take them out, which was pretty cool. That's kind of the camp stuff right there. The Battleship was total camp, but I thought the vehicles were cool. Those are always a nice element in these movies, and we'll get to see that later on tonight too in our last movie. But yeah, I don't mind them at all. I think they're cool.
Eric, what'd you think of this this part?
No, I certainly enjoyed this part. I enjoy their introduction. I do like their introduction and Robin's proper introduction with his proper suit. And the whole battleship thing is kind of funny. What I don't like is right afterwards when they land on the rock and Robin attempts a 60s Batman-esque line.
Holy rusted metal.
Yeah, and Batman just barely responds. I'm like, huh? What? Okay. I was like, is that supposed to be a shot at the series? I don't get it.
Yeah, it was.
It was over like a wet fart.
Yeah, it was supposed to be for those that remember the movie or the show. Yeah.
Yeah.
So me and Andy probably.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Scott, what'd you think of these this part of the movie?
I enjoyed that part. And like stepping back real quick, we didn't speak about this. They figure out Batman's identity by the Nygma tech, which I thought was pretty interesting because they have, you know, Bruce try it on and they see that he's Batman and they actually break into Wayne Manor.
That's right, yeah.
Take Nicole Kidman, Chase Meridian hostage and they destroy the Batcave. So yep. I thought that was a pretty big scene and it was like, wow, like these, they're not messing around.
And I made a note, but how does Wayne Manor not have better security?
Like, it's real bad.
It's so bad. You got the bad. Like, there's no security at all, and he just easily waltz right in.
Well, it's Halloween. Come on.
Oh, come on. Really? You know, there'll be cameras everywhere. I mean, it's silly. It's a little hokey.
They moved Wayne Manor closer into Gotham itself by the fact that trick-or-treaters show up and that Bruce can take a travel pod from his office to the Batcave.
Wow. Nah, you got to hit the rich people houses for Halloween. They give out the full size, so not the kid size.
Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Get full bars, of course.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, that's true. And also, you know, probably as hot as she was earlier in the movie, as when she gets kidnapped and is tied up.
And let's not forget, Bruce actually, before that, quit. He was quitting to be a Batman, and they were doing psychobabble bullshit between each other as foreplay. But he was totally done being Batman at this point. He was going to quit for this woman who two minutes earlier was into Batman, but now she wants Bruce.
Who basically invites Batman on a booty call.
Yeah. Wait, you think he was going to quit or was he just going to tell her?
No, he was quitting. He quit.
Yeah.
He quit.
He like got rid. He told Alfred to get rid of all the suits and everything.
He said, Alfred, I'm done. I quit.
Okay. I must have missed that part.
You didn't miss much.
I know. I just get to think about the fact that they figure out Batman's identity from himself. Like, he screwed himself over. He knew that was a bad device, and he still went through with it.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So we get to the end. You know, Robin's been a sidekick for about an hour and already gets captured. And, you know, he's got to make the choice. We have a, you know, I mean, I kind of like this scene, too, with Jim Carrey, where he's like, riddle me this, riddle me that. Who's afraid of the big black bat kind of thing?
And he's dressed as Zool from Ghostbusters.
Yes.
he looks yeah. awful. I hate that. Yeah. When he's not wearing green anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, he's more.
Yeah, go look up Zool at Ghostbusters and put them side by side. They look like the same person.
Mm-hmm. So where he kind of, you know, feeds into both of their egos in terms of, you know, where Two-Face needs to, you know, flip his coin, and I that leads to his demise. And, I mean, Edward Nygma just gets too much brain power. I don't know. Scott, what do you think of the ending and the final battle in this movie?
So, I kind of like the ending because it played in... Well, I like the Two-Face ending. I couldn't really figure out the Riddler one. But I like the Two-Face ending because Batman just outsmarts him by throwing all the coins in the air to trick him, and he falls to his death, which also breaks Batman's rule of not killing, and we've seen that in two of these three movies.
And yeah, we didn't really bring that up much.
Yeah, he supposedly not killing, but you know, he takes out the big guys, the big evils, and then with Jim Carrey, he just outsmarts him, but he finally like outsmarts him after Jim Carrey outsmarted him earlier, so it was like, okay. Because he had to choose between Robin or Chase Meridian. And it's like, I probably would have chose Chase. Sorry, Robin. But that's why there's multiple Robins.
You're not alone.
Yeah. We got to test out his new bat suit where he gets to cover his eyes as he throws Bangarang into that big thing.
We did get to see the bat butt earlier, too, which was a...
Oh, I forgot about the bat butt.
Yeah. We get to see even more in the next movie. That.
Bat nipples. Bat nips. Bat nips.
but I will say, like, riddle me this, riddle me that. I think me and my little brother said that for about 15 years just because it was like we talked about earlier, Jim Carrey was hitting on everything from, like, 94 to 96. So, like, I rewatched this movie so many times, and I could probably text my little brother right now and be like, riddle me this. And he would just finish it off for me. Just we used to repeat it like Mad Men. So, but and then at the very end, you see Arkham Asylum, and you see like Riddler's in there, and he's like, "I'm gonna tell you who Batman is." And Chase is like, "Yeah." And he's like, "It's me." And like Chase tells Batman, "You have nothing to worry about. I'll see you at home tonight," or something to that extent. And then you never see her, hear from her ever again.
Just like every woman in his life. Never see him again, but they all know who he is.
Yeah, as well as all those henchmen who helped break into Wayne Manor, they know who Batman is. Nothing's brought about them. Just that Edward doesn't know.
Yeah, Eric, what do you think of the final, the climax of this movie?
It felt kind of rushed at a point, like kidnapping Robin and Chase and like choose and just destroying everything. Like it just all comes about way too quickly. And then like the coin thing. I guess the coin thing does kind of work. But it works for Batman killing him so that Robin doesn't, because he's obviously, you know, he wants to get revenge on Two-Face for killing his family. So he's sort of taking a hit for him. But and then the last scene of Carrie, it's just like I'm just kind of done with him by this point. It's been so over the top.
With the great Rene Auberjonois as the doctor at Arkham.
I was just going to say Odo. I'm glad you guys named pronounced correctly. I was like, it's being run by Odo, which is kind of perfect casting.
Yeah. Sean, what about what do you think of the ending?
I actually didn't mind the ending. I mean, the attack and all that on Enigma and the twirling thing, mind thing, giant thing. Okay, so that was kind of a typical ending. What I really liked is the final ending where you actually see the Arkham, and I like the end of the Riddler, like when he says he knows who Batman is, and then he comes running out with his little bat wings. I thought that was pretty cool ending there. So I thought it was a nice little roundup, and I did like the I liked the Two-Face ending too, where he threw all the coins up in the air. So I think the ending was suitable. The movie sucks. I don't like the movie. It just makes fun of, to me, it almost makes fun of the first two movies we saw, and just not great. But I think the ending worked really well, and I do like the end scene. I actually do like the end running scene where they're both running out into the bat signal. I think that's a pretty cool, neat scene there. So I did like that.
This movie has its good parts, but on the whole, not a very good movie.
Mm-mm.
Now we get to a movie that has no good parts and it's terrible. And I was having flashbacks to when I saw it in the movie theater, and I actually texted my two friends who I saw it with, and I was like, you know, I texted them, and I said I'm watching Batman and Robin for a pod, and my one friend responds, "Suit me up, Uncle Alfred." And it literally, when that line,
I hate that line. So
when
much.
That line is said, my buddy Steve leans over to me in the movie theater and goes, "Movie's ruined."
he's not lying. He was exactly right.
No,
wait,
so bad.
He waited till then to say the movie was ruined.
Oh.
Well, I mean, you know, he knows that I try to give most movies the benefit of the doubt, but I guess he just couldn't hold his tongue anymore. So. Yeah, he's just like, no, it's I can't. Yeah, it was horrible up to that point. So we have 1997's Batman and Robin, where we get some more additions. We got new villains, more additions to the cast. We have Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy. We have Arnold Schwarzenegger, who actually gets top billing, much like Jack Nicholson did. He plays Mr. Freeze. And then we have Alicia Silverstone as Batgirl. So what did you think of this casting? We'll start with you, Eric. What did you think of these additions to the story? As well as, you know, I mean, it's Jeep Swenson as Bane, who really doesn't do much, but if you want to mention him as well.
They were supposed to get Kane Hodder. He was Schumacher's first choice. I was like, that would have been fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Schwarzenegger. I guess for the tone of the movie they're going for, I mean, he's not I think of Mr. Freeze, I think of the definitive, it's like Batman the Animated Series, just the ultimate cold, detached person with the filter voice. And, you know, he's cracking the jokes and such. You know, it's fine. It's probably some of his best work in the 90s, honestly, the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Run Schwarzenegger was on.
Mm-hmm.
And he certainly got paid. That's why his top bill, I think, like $25 million to this movie. Which also probably the reason why they didn't make any sequels, because this movie did not probably make back its budget. So it's alright. He's another person who gets shortchanged of his whole origin story. I would just almost prefer just a whole Poison Ivy movie. I think that'd be interesting, different. I think Oom was good in the movie. I think actually maybe she'd be the best part of the whole movie. So, yeah. Clooney's the worst. I guess I should just say that. He's the dirt worst.
That's right, yeah. George, once again, we have a new Batman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Doing a double duty in between ER. Well, so he's probably not committed to the whole thing on screen. You can see it because, you know, he's still working on a TV show at the time.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for me, my issue is, now I'm not a comics guy, like I've said, but wouldn't Poison Ivy and Mr. Freeze have conflicting ideologies? Mr. Freeze basically wants to, you know, to put us into an ice age, and Poison Ivy, yeah, she wants to kill all the humans and have plants, but plants don't survive in, you know, frozen land. So, Sean, what do you think of these additions and the choice for these villains for this movie?
Well, first off, Andy, I think you're using common sense, which this movie has none of.
This is the first time for everything.
Is spot on, but really, let's put it in the context of this garbage.
At Batman's Rogues Gallery, which is immense, and these are the two villains you pop out and say, "Let's pair them up." I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Anyway, go ahead, Sean.
with Bane, and you know, Bane's a whole other thing. Bane in this movie is an absolute tragedy because in the comics, Bane totally destroyed Batman in the comics, broke his back, and all that. But anyway, I was okay with Schwarzenegger's Freeze. It didn't bug me too much. I was kind of shocked how quickly they jumped into it with him as Freeze. Like, it's like instantaneous. There he is. I thought the visuals and everything in his introduction in the museum were pretty cool. It was really cool visually, but then they lost me at the hockey rink bullshit villains. Once they started doing the hockey rink and the roller skate, I knew this movie was done for me. That's the moment for me that I said I'm out.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Extreme sports were big at the time, which I think is what they were going for.
Well, and then Clooney and even Alicia Silverstone. This is a classic case of let's just cast two people that are hot in this time, in this moment. So they were both very, very hot at that moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's the only reason why they're both in this movie.
Yeah. What do you think of Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy?
You know how I feel about Uma Thurman. Let's move on.
She's in the club.
She's in the club.
All right. Scott, what are you with the casting additions / changes?
I liked Clooney as Batman better than Val Kilmer. Mm-hmm. Like, at least, like, you see Clooney, you see Clooney emote some when you, like, when you find out Alfred's dying. Because, like, you know, he gets a little upset because Alfred basically raised him, unlike Kilmer, who was having, like, Nom-like flashbacks the whole time. So, but, you know, Arnold, as Mr. Freeze is just ridiculous. The first time you see him, he says, "The Iceman cometh," and I was my God.
So many bad quotes. So many bad quotes.
Get the dinosaurs, the Ice Age.
Yes.
Yeah, he has that. I hate that. And, like, the first 10 minutes of the movie, I sent it to our group message, and I said, this movie's terrible. And, like, you know, Batman and Robin are flying around on the Brontosaurus like they're the damn Silver Surfer. And it's,
oh my God, I made that note. You're killing me tonight, Scott.
Yeah, I was just looking at the IMDb trivia. 27 ice puns in this movie.
Yeah, I put Silver Surfer Dynamic Duo. That's what I put.
That's a low number for some reason.
It's a little scary, Sean.
It is.
We're in sync tonight.
Comic geeks rule.
Yes. But, like, I mean, I'm just talking about, like, the stuff I mentioned was in the first 10 minutes, and we get to, like, Uma Thurman's okay. I mean, whatever. Bane is just completely wasted. He doesn't say anything. He's basically an idiot, and they dress him up, and, like, he still has all his mask and his venom running through him and everything, but, like, he's, like, dressed up in, like, a suit, and he looks like in the cartoons when they would, like, dress up animals and everything and have him pretend to be humans. And I was just like, this demographic was definitely, like, 8 to 12 that they were aiming for right here.
Yeah.
They went too dark in the first two movies, and in these last two movies, they were like, we're gonna push them to the kids, damn it.
Well, this one is full cheese. This one's full on. It's kind of jumped over the last one at this point, right? Did you not notice, like, with Clooney, like, every time he acts, his head shakes? You didn't catch that? Like, every time he does a mannerism or he talks, his head shakes like he's got Tourette's or something. He's just really – something's not right with him. There's something wrong with him.
And also in this one, like, so we were confused if Robin was 15 or 30 in this one. This whole time,
40.
He's acting like a 16-year-old.
Yes.
Goes, we're supposed to be a family.
She loves me, not you.
Yeah.
You're jealous.
It's a little whiny bitch.
I mean, I thought Uma Thurman was okay. A little too heavy on the Mae West impersonation, I think. And for those of you younger than me and Sean, Mae West was a famous actress back in the 30s and 40s in Hollywood. So,
back when Andy and I were born in the 30s.
I've heard of her. I've never seen her work.
Well, she was more of a caricature. She was like that. You know, she was a buxom blonde and had, like, she was come up and see me sometime. You know,
she was like a 30s Marilyn Monroe probably what I've heard.
She had a distinct way of talking.
Did she do the quote, like, do a whistle? You know how whistle do you or something like that?
Probably.
I think she was. Yes, I think she was the one that said that.
One actor that's in this that, you know, I only knew him from I think Scrooged and maybe Gremlins too, because I don't know when did Smallville air?
2001.
Yeah, so we're talking about John Glover.
Movie about Dr. Frankenstein.
Yes.
Yes. He was AKA the Riddler from Batman the Animated Series. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes. Yep. And becomes Lionel Luthor in the true villain of Smallville. So.
Yes.
Yeah, very small part, but very good. I mean, the origin stories too. Like another thing I picked up on was, like, they were both similar. They fell into something.
Kind of thing. It's like, and I wrote, like the Joker. They all fall into a vat of something, and they're created. Like this one is plants, mm-hmm. and then it's just crazy. And then he falls into a vat and he turns into Mr. Freeze.
But I mean, Mr. Freeze, okay, is smoking a cigar with bunny slippers on, dancing around to the Snow Miser song.
Yeah. Okay, that one popped me a little bit.
Who like the fuck Miser looks song. At that and says, this belongs here?
Well, then he makes everybody sing the song. It's pretty bad.
The only good part of that whole scene is Vivica A. Fox as Misbehaving.
Yes.
Who's smoking in that scene.
Yes, she is.
Oh, yeah. His non-love interest.
Yes. But we have two Sports Illustrated swimsuit models. Vandella and Elle Macpherson, who should not have been cast in this movie. I mean, literally, Vandella just had to stand around and be, like, you know, underwater. But Elle Macpherson, I mean, maybe with the addition of Batgirl, they didn't need his love interest to be anything more than window dressing.
Yeah, and she wanted to marry him, and it's just bad.
Yeah.
Now,
nothing.
What do you think of the change of Barbara's origin story? From Commissioner Gordon's daughter, I guess, to Alfred's niece?
Yeah. God forgive me, give Pat Hingle more to do in this movie.
He's the worst cop ever. He somehow was a decent cop in the first Batman and is just a bumbling fool by the end of this.
Well, because he became the commissioner. I think at the beginning he was a lieutenant or a captain or something.
No. You're thinking of the Nolan Batmans.
Oh, okay.
Where no, he was commissioner in the first movie, but he was a take charge guy.
But getting back to Barbara, again, another tragedy. They just brought her in the easiest way they could. Hey, Alfred's sick. Let's bring his niece in. Oh, by the way, she's going to be a rebel that likes to do racing on the streets, and she's going to be another one that we're just going to throw a suit on because if you put a suit on, you automatically know how to fight. This movie pisses me off so much.
I mean, we might talked about the back credit card also.
I never leave home. Like they're bidding on Poison Ivy, and like the next thing you know, Robin and Batman are like $1 million, $2 million, and he pulls out a black Gotham supposed to be like an Amex card. He's like, I'll just borrow the money from you, and it's like, oh my god.
Horrible.
I sent out a tweet, and I was like, I hope whoever wrote this movie never writes anything in Hollywood ever again. And then. My little
since
brother.
Since I'm on the Wikipedia, let's look it up. Who shot?
My little
this.
Brother texted me and was like, "Yeah, the guy who was the person who wrote it was an executive producer for Fringe, which, if you like sci-fi, was a great sci-fi series on Fox in the mid 2000s." So it's like, I guess, you know what the hell he's doing.
This dude won an Oscar for Best Adapted Screenplay for A Beautiful Mind.
The other thing that was wrong, like the plot device, Alfred's sick, and he just happens to have the same disease that Freeze's wife has. So, again, another trope. It's just like they're trying to just throw so much into this movie, and none of it makes sense. They're like, hey, let's steal from this person and put this into Alfred. That way we can save his life at the end instead of him dying. It's just, this movie's just so bad.
Yeah.
You know, and then you got the gangsters and the, what is it, the Turkish Bath gang members, I think we were talking about, Scott? The abandoning Turkish bath. Then you have the gorilla gang in their gorilla suits. This movie's just a hot mess.
Yeah.
I mean, you have Freeze, who's useless without his gun, and his car. It reminds me of Gru's car from Despicable Me. So I was like, although that doesn't come out for quite some time in this movie, but that's all I kept thinking the whole time now.
Now, you guys caught the Coolio cameo too, right? As a bookie on the death bike racing?
Mm-hmm.
He was basically Ludacris' characters in the Fast and the Furious.
Correct.
Movie.
Yep.
According to Wikipedia, he's supposed to be Jonathan Kane. He was supposed to be Scarecrow for the next, if they made a next movie.
Really? That's who he was supposed to be in that?
Yeah.
And there's weird. There's like no way I even saw that. There was even no way.
No.
Wow.
No.
Wow.
Hmm. No.
Yeah. This movie just sucks, Andy.
It had ridiculous sound effects throughout. That snake plant hybrid looked more fake than Audrey 2 from Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, Andy, I made that note too. There's a lot of symmetry in these notes we're taking tonight. Yeah.
So supposedly Alfred has McGregor syndrome, and I googled it. So I was like, is this like a real thing or something in the comics? And someone wrote, while the disease didn't kill Alfred thanks to Freeze's cure, it did kill off this iteration of the Batman movies.
That's a good analogy.
I agree 100%. This movie was bad. Like Batgirl, like, for some reason, I guess when I was younger, I thought Alicia Silverstone had a bigger part in this movie. She must have filmed like 3 days and was like, I'm out of here by the weekend.
Well, I think they cut a lot of her scenes.
Okay.
They should have cut some more.
Because you had the whole fat girl thing going on. Because, you know, she had gained weight. You know, she's not the same girl that was in Clueless. I mean, she really didn't do much of any note after Clueless for a while. I mean, you know, she had that movie with Benicio del Toro, and then she did that crappy movie with Brendan Fraser.
Excess Baggage.
Yeah, Excess Baggage, and she did Blast from the Past. I mean, she really didn't do anything good. I mean, now she's, you know, started coming back, and now she's starting playing moms and stuff. But she was the it girl based on one movie and Aerosmith videos, and she gained a little weight. I mean, you know, she put on the Freshman 15, if you will. And she got roasted for it, too.
That's ridiculous. Nah, she's very hot. I don't know. These people are stupid.
Go ahead.
And one thing I did like was going back to wrestlers that I thought was in movies. I was right with this one. Jesse Ventura was the prison guard at Arkham when Poison Ivy teams up with Mr. Freeze and they break him out of Arkham.
Yeah, I had that in my notes because he has to be in every Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
Arnold and him are good buddies.
Yeah.
Yep.
And if you recall... Oh, sorry.
No, I'm saying when they get together, when Ivy and Mr. Freeze get together, they said they were going to rule the world and be like Adam and Evil. I paused the movie and had to walk around my house after that. I was like, I can't deal with this right now.
No, I was just going to bring up the fact that, remember that WCW vignette where the Dungeon of Doom are hanging around the set in this movie? Back lot?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
The last of Dungeon of Doom film stuff on back lot of this movie since Warner Brothers, whole Turner synergy.
Oh, wow.
I had no idea of that.
Me neither.
So this movie ends, thankfully, and the rumor going around, I'm sure, like I said, how much you guys knew. So they did want to bring Scarecrow in for the next one, and Jeff Goldblum was the rumor, and they wanted to introduce Madonna as Harley Quinn. And with a dream sequence or some kind of sequence with Jack Nicholson as the Joker, because the plot was going to be the Scarecrow is preying on Batman's biggest fear with the aid of Harley Quinn, which was the Joker.
That could have worked. Jeff Goldblum as Scarecrow probably would have been pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
He looks like this. Now, Madonna, that's a whole other story.
Wouldn't.
If they had made it serious, that could have worked. That would have been kind of a great, that could have been a good movie, but they killed it with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this killed the franchise for a very long time. So any final thoughts on this four-movie run before we move on to our bonus film?
I would just say quit watching Batman after Batman Returns and then wait for the next set of movies to come out. Skip these two. That's what I would say.
You watch four seasons of Batman the Animated Series.
That too. Go watch the animated series. That's better than both these last two movies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So as a bonus on this episode, we decided to watch the Batman the movie from 1966, which came after the end of the first season of the television show, starring Adam West and Burt Ward as, you know, Batman and Robin, as well as Burgess Meredith as the Penguin, Cesar Romero as the Joker, Lee Merriweather as Catwoman, and Frank Gorshin as the Riddler. Now, I saw this many years ago. I think the first time I saw this was in the 90s, because it wasn't on TV a lot. I think Nickelodeon or Nick at Night played it when they acquired the Batman series to air, because I used to watch Batman during the day in reruns when I was a little kid. Now, Sean, you saw this years ago as well, right?
The first time I saw it was actually in the 70s. Wow. Because on the local, like, syndicated, the channels that would play the syndicated shows, mm-hmm. they used to have, like, midday movies and stuff like that, and this is one of the movies they played, and so I watched it then. So it was, like, probably late 70s the first time I saw it.
Well, all right. Eric, when did you first see this movie?
In my teens some point. I try to remember it was maybe could have been like on one of the Fox stations, FX or something, because I know FX played the 60s show for a while. I think Fox had a movie channel. I probably saw it there, Fox movie channel.
Okay.
I haven't watched it, like, I maybe watched it like once or twice compared to the TV show, obviously. Yeah. Well, I watched the episode, like, the episodes more. So. Mm-hmm. But, no, it's an interesting revisit.
All right. Scott, had you seen this movie before?
No, the first time I saw it was yesterday and today. And I was like, oh my God. I knew it was, like, corny and cheeseball-y, but I didn't realize it was this corny and cheeseball.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't. I think this movie's wonderful. I don't.
Yeah,
know
it is.
About.
It has a soft spot in my heart as well.
Me too. So yeah, of course, me and Andy will have the soft spot for this one because this is what we grew up on.
I mean, come on. There's a rubber shark on his leg,
and with a bat repellent.
He's got his bat, his bat, oceanic repellent sprays. He's got shark, he's got whale, he's got barracuda, and manta ray. He is prepared for any kind of attack from a giant, whatever, in the ocean. I love
that. They always have the right thing in their bat utility belts at the right time.
And how cool was the opening of this? It had the inspirational thank you open, and then it had the old James Bond spotlight, which mm-hmm. I thought was badass. I thought the opening was pretty damn good.
Yeah. And one thing I really felt that we really need cops with Irish accents again, just like they had in the 40s and the 50s.
Chief O'Hara.
Oh, I got to call Batman and get the bat signal up in the crowd.
Yep.
Of course, I'm going to get yelled at by the Brits for that one. Anyway, yeah, so the United Underworld. I love that part. And the on-the-nose dialogue with the labels for all the equipment. And we mentioned this.
The signs, because you didn't know what it was, so they put signs there so you could read what it was, so they didn't really have to explain anything. That's a trope in the whole entire movie, because they do it in the Batcave, too.
Yes, in the Batcave. You know, you have, the Bat vehicles just strewn about. You know, the Bat boat's just sitting there tied up at a dock. The bat cycle is, like, under some fake...
covered in brush, like, off the side of a highway.
At the exact point where they're going to... you know, mess with the penguin or get knocked out.
And the helicopter has its own like, team with like the bat signal on their back. It's so bad, but it's great.
The most, the line uttered the most in the movie, if I could just fill in the blank.
So Scott, somehow Robin is able to solve all these like Riddler clues. It's like
but they're all ridiculous.
What the hell?
Well, I even had it in the first 13 minutes, he's resolved the Bane riddle. And, you know, like the first 13 movies, the 13 minutes we have the Batmobile, the Batcopper, we have Rooftop Girls. I put costumes in West Gut because it looks like he has a little bit of a beer gut because he's really out of shape. every object has a bat something. So you got the bat ladder. I yelled at the shark. You have the Batman. You have the yacht. I mean... and then the computer. Then you had the back computer in 1966. A lot of stuff happens in like the first 15 minutes of this movie. Oh, and
also,
Commissioner Gordon's secretary's name is Bunny.
Also, what I like is when Batman is like fighting off the shark, and that Robin takes the shark repellent down to him on the ladder. who the hell is piloting the plane? Why didn't that just nosedive into the ground?
Automated bat, whatever, some kind of automated bat thing, like everything else in the movie.
They had autopilot in 1966, I would assume.
Yeah. Bat autopilot.
Mm-hmm. And why is Joker wearing a mask at times? Who can identify him with all that makeup?
And I don't know about you guys, but I thought the bat boat and the bat copter were pretty badass for 66. I thought they were both pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like the Batmobile, too.
Yeah, badass.
Oh, the OG Batmobile, yeah.
Yeah.
Eric, what are some of your thoughts?
I don't know. I don't think this kind of format of Batman works as a 90-minute film compared to half-hour installments. Mm-hmm. So, it's really the plot is not. It's just as goofy as the TV show. I mean, the TV show had them being literally like turned into cardboard cutouts of themselves. At time, having to be like energized, so turning the world leaders into dust, and then having to
put incredibly racist scene right there. By the way, that shit did not fly in 2020.
You're incredibly racist scene, absolutely.
Yeah, well, it was the mid-60s.
But I kind of like. I thought that was a pretty savage gun they used, though. You just turn these people to dust. That's pretty savage for Batman in 66.
It looked like a super soaker. That's what I thought.
Yeah,
it kind of did. I love the best line in the whole movie is, some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
I mean, yeah.
Oh, my God, the 15-minute bomb run was ridiculous.
Well,
I know. He's just too nice of a guy. He doesn't want to hurt anyone or anything.
Well, Adam West said this, his secret to playing Batman was, you have to deliver the most ridiculous lines like you're reciting Shakespeare. that was his secret to that character, I guess.
But there's so many things. Like, how about the military just selling a sub to somebody named Penguin? they just sell it to them. Oh, we get rid of them. We just sold it.
We sold it to Penguin. Kind of,
yeah, and then Batman chastises him over the phone, which was hilarious.
There's a bomb in that restaurant, and those two women are just sitting there eating their crap. Everybody runs.
A lot of people just treat the villains and heroes as like nonchalantly. Like, no one ever questions like why they're all dressed up as such.
Well, and I also think we need to talk about how horny this Batman was too.
Oh yeah,
because he's like a total horn dog, and they totally set a trap for him using Catwoman's vagina, and it's a whole rest of the movie's based on tricking him using Catwoman, which is. The stagecoach, like the part when they're riding in the coach and he's trying to get some in the back of the coach was crazy. It's crazy.
People say he just wanted that Russian tail, you know what I mean?
Yes. And then he couldn't figure out who she was the whole rest of the movie, which is also really... He could do a riddle and figure out a riddle, but he couldn't figure out that was Catwoman.
Also, what I did like was even when Batman's away, he still doesn't allow Robin to drive the Batmobile because you have Alfred... with his own mask on, and he's driving the Batmobile when they're supposed to be spying on Batman to make sure nothing happens. And Robin thinks Batman's about to hook up with Catwoman, so he's like, turn off the camera. So they turn the video off. That's when Batman gets his ass whooped and kidnapped. So
I thought that whole thing was kind of funny, actually, turning off the camera. I thought that was pretty funny.
Alfred, do you have your driver's license?
Yeah.
Well, on the show, Alfred did, wore the bat suit as like, as a diversion, or you know, sometimes
good
old Alan Napier.
Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So I love how they asked for $1 billion from each nation. You know, Dr. Evil, you know, is around at that time, and still only asked for $1 million. I mean, come on. I started cracking up there. You don't see the fight graphics until the final battle on top of the Penguin sub. You know.
I was just thinking that they're different from the TV show.
Yeah, pals, biffs, and swaps.
Yeah, you saw that in every fight on the show, but you don't see it until the very end.
Well, this is a serious film.
The graphics themselves have an evolution throughout the show where you can tell which season you're watching. Mm-hmm. Like, first the words pop up on the screen, and then it's a whole cutaway to to it, and then by the third season, it's like has a lighting effect to it.
Well, by the third season, their budget was cut, so they did a lot of fight scenes in the dark. Just had those things going because they were actually filming it because they couldn't afford the extras and the sets.
Yeah,
it was very that fight was very old Hollywood style. Like I don't know if you guys ever saw the movie McClintock, where there's a similar fight where they're all people are all getting knocked into the mud. It was like just a matter of time before everybody gets like you know thrown off the submarine except for Catwoman.
Well, and a couple of them were actually like jumping off like they were diving, which is even funnier. And then the ending's great, where the security console, they use a garden hose just to water them all. I thought that was pretty funny.
And they all come back, like, all mixed up.
So like, all the cheese that's in this, you know, you expect it in this. It makes the movie great, which is the reason why the last two movies you watched aren't great, because they tried too hard to be something like this and are not even close.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, any final thoughts on the 1966 Batman?
I'm glad I never have to watch it again.
Scott hated this movie because he's been quiet. I can tell he hates it.
Yeah, I'm glad I never have to watch this movie ever again.
This one was a nostalgia run for me. I probably won't watch it again, but it was a feel-good nostalgia. And I agree with Eric. If they had broke this down in like four or five parts as part of the TV series, it'd probably be much more, probably a better watch, I would say.
Yeah,
it felt like a chore to definitely watch for me personally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he didn't do the Batutsi, which is, you want to see him do that.
Yes, you want to see the Batutsi. Awesome. So that's going to bring a close to episode number 4 of Blockbuster Rewind. So we'll be back in about a month's time. And Scott, you have the floor. And Scott, what will our theme topic of the next episode and who will be our guest?
Our theme for the next episode, since it's the Halloween month, will be all 4 Scream movies. I haven't came up with the other movie to watch yet, but it'll be Scream 1-4, which I personally love. And there will be a fifth one coming in, I think, January of 2022. So I'm pretty excited for that. And our guest host will be Scott Criscolo. So we'll have the Podfather on.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
That's some good films there. Good pick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I definitely have a lot to say about some of those movies because I really enjoy them. I mean, I'm not the biggest horror movie guy, but I love the Scream movies, so I'm looking forward to that. So let's kind of go around though and say what everybody's got else going on out there. Sean, what's going on your pods? Are you guessing anywhere else? What do you have to point people to?
So the first thing I'll mention is the latest episode of Chicken Salad came out today, the day we're recording. So go check that out with Ben and Logan and myself, where we look at Fall Brawl 99. It was a tour to get through, but it's a fun show as always. Highway to the Impact Zone, I'm on that once a month, so catch me on that. Also once a month, the new comics pod over on North South Connection called Shrink Rat, where Jenny, Tim, and I look at a character in a story arc and kind of assess them from a mental health standpoint. So the first one we did, Demon in the Bottle, and we should be recording our next one in a couple weeks. And I probably let the cat out of the bag, but we're going to be looking at The Killing Joke, which is a famous Joker story. So we'll be doing that. Scott, I figured you'd appreciate that one. And then this week, episode number 3 of NWA Crack and Roll with Dr. G, Colin McDougall, and a friend of mine who's never done a pod before, Keith Hughes. We look at June 85, Jim Crockett. So that should be out as of today. It'll be out this Wednesday, depending on when this drops. So that's what I got going on.
All right, very cool. Scott, you have anything to point people to? Social medias, other pods?
Yes, by the time this drops, I will be on the newest edition of the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast on the North-South Connection podcast network. It was a fun episode that we did. We tackled the Eddie RVD ladder match, which was amazing. And I can be contacted on Twitter at Scott_Shiflett.
All right. Eric, what's going on with your letterbox?
My letterbox has been a little vacant lately, but I'm planning on filling it up because I'm going to try and rewatch all of Robert Zemeckis' movies.
Okay.
So, look forward to seeing Used Cars for the first time because I heard it's very good and it's Kurt Russell in it, so it has to be good. So other than that, I'm gonna be working a lot of hours my job, unfortunately, But hey, if you want to book me as a podcast guest on the weekends, I can be found at Eric Eels 1, E-R-I-C-E-E-L-L-S 1 on Twitter.
All right, very cool. As for myself, the latest episode of Laugh in Theater, like I mentioned earlier, Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story, that is with Jambalaya Jake Williams. I am in the process of lining up the next set of guests for Laugh in Theater, but I could tell you that some of the movies that we may be watching, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Robin Hood, Men in Tights, Ted, I Love You Man, and Beer Fest, so stick around. Check that out coming up on the feed. A brand new show is joining the feed coming up. It is called Making Mount Rushmore. Basically, everybody says, who's your Mount Rushmore of this, that, the other thing? And there is, it's not going to be a hosted pod. It's actually going to be a rotating panelist. So there'll be four people on every episode, and you can look for that. That's going to be coming out twice a month, starting in a week or so. Look forward to that. The first episodes we're going to do are HBO dramas and HBO comedies, followed by Marvel villains and DC villains. So every show has a similar theme, but we're going to look at two separate entities in that theme. Also, over on the wrestling feed, I'm getting together with Mr. J. Arsenio D'Amato for the newest episode of Evolution. We're going to be covering Rowdy Roddy Piper and his illustrious career. We're going to start all the way in the beginning and move all the way up until the end. And I've actually, this is the first time a guest has given me required viewing. So Johnny said, make sure you watch this on the network, the Best of Piper or whatever collection it is. So I have homework to do for that pod. But I'm really looking forward to this. I love John D'Amato. Piper was always one of my favorites growing up. So I can't wait to hear what Johnny has to say about that. Also here, The Year in Pop will be back in a couple of weeks. We're going to be doing the year 1985. And also another new pod is in the works. So if you are a fan of Trivia Nights and you think you know a lot about pop culture, keep your eyes out on the social medias, because we'll be doing a casting call for a new game show pod coming here to the pop feed in the coming weeks and months. So stay tuned for that. But that's going to bring an end, though, to this episode. Like I said, I want to thank my co-hosts, Scott and Eric. Once again, another great show, guys. We've gotten, we hit a grand slam so far, four great episodes. And a big thank you to Sean for being our guest tonight. All right. Well, that being said, I want to thank everybody out there for listening. And we'll see you on the next episode. Take care, everybody.